Okay. All right. Good morning. Let me call to order the Oregon State Capital Foundation quarterly meeting of June 17th. Here we are in hearing room A. 50. Where am I? Okay. I'm exhausted already, and I know what we have ahead of us. It's a long agenda. On the phone, we have two participants. They are... Hello?
AP,
great. Thank you. And who else?
I think it's
just AP. It said two participants when we...
Including.
Oh, that's us. Okay. Great, AP. Thank you. Now I'm technologically updated. Welcome, everyone. This is a momentous occasion because all of our committees have been hard at work with many, many activities, and we're going to make some big decisions today and move forward, welcoming the implementation of Chapter 35 Oregon Laws 2015, otherwise known as House Bill 2037. Let me first take up the minutes. I know that Joan had had some review of them and gave them her changes to Nick, and they've been incorporated in the draft we have in front of us, I believe.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the draft in front of us, but I'm sure Nick did that.
Anyone else have any comments or corrections on the... Forget comments. I just want corrections or additions to the minutes that are before you for our April 15th meeting.
You know, I just noticed that I don't show up as present or absent.
Oh, no.
I believe I was there.
That's foundation purgatory.
We should make that.
And I believe you were here, were you not?
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
Maybe it's just Kim. Well, Kim Duncan knows on it, too.
Yeah, Kim was here.
Brad, this is Sharon. I was there too, and I don't know if it's appropriate to list me, but I did do the training, so you might want to.
Yeah.
You might want to know.
Right? Yeah. So there's a reference to the name. Let's that be under staff or
whatever.
Contractor? Yeah.
I would just like to show that I was.
Absolutely. Your next to final meeting.
I don't want to be forgotten.
He said it's his final.
Today's his final, but yes. April was his next to final. Yeah. Okay. Any other catches like that? That was good. A motion to approve. Any objection? Hearing none? So adopted. Cool. All right. Now we get to the first fun component of our agenda this morning. And I now turn the microphone over to the chair of our Budget and Finance Committee, Jerry Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Help.
First, we want to review the financial statements, balance sheet, profit and loss.
14, 15. You want to go through those first. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to let Nick do that. Okay, Nick?
As he moves to
poor Nick.
Position number two.
He needs a little pedometer on him today.
AP, do you have those in front of you?
Yep.
Great.
Okay, so... if you look at the balance sheet, this is the as of the same time that we looked at the executive committee 2 weeks ago. Overall total operating funds at $112,000. Total checkings and savings, that includes operating and history gateway, at $1.035 million. And if you look at the profit and loss statement, this is similar to what you review every quarter. In some areas, we are approaching our budgeted limit. In some areas, we have a lot of room left, but you'll see that a lot of that is changing later on when we do the budget review portion of this meeting. And of course, the transaction detail is the larger 17-page document, and this gives you detail on every transaction per your chart of accounts from the budget. It shows you individual transactions for money taken in and individual transactions for money spent. I've been working with the bookkeeper to input more consistent memo lines. So you'll see under the capital friends, we were using alternate language, but as you move farther throughout the year, we're now trying to use consistent language per the different living giving levels that were approved earlier. So you'll see friend of the capital or empire builder, those sorts of things.
All right.
In terms of the financial statements, that's all I have.
Yes, Herb.
Just a note on the balance sheet. I don't know whether you really have room for it or not, but State Treasury Fund, I think it's flags and the Medal of Honor.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Any other observations? And Jerry will be bringing us up to speed on some of the changes to format that we are now enjoying and benefiting from. But Nick's absolutely right. The balance sheets and profit and loss statements already reflect some of those changes to bring us more, more informed of where we are at any given point during the year in relationship to our budget and our expenditures. So we don't need to take any motion in regards to this. Either accepting or reviewing. It is for your information. And now, Ms. Thompson will take us to the budget itself.
Okay. First, I just want to remind everybody what our goal was. Our chair asked us that we try to consolidate and simplify the budget so that we, the board members, can become owners of the budget and understand it fully. Well, that was a next to impossible task, but we did the best we could.
Because of our ability to understand, or?
everything above. we were able to do it more on our operating budget, but when it comes to the History Gateway, it became more essential that we actually do more itemization, which created a more complicated looking budget. It's not complicated. It's just a line items that makes it easier for Julene and her people to understand where they are, what's expected of them from the financial standpoint, and will help us as foundation board members. And of course, we strove to make it just as accurate as possible. And all of that is with the hopes that we board members will own the budget and recognize that whenever we make decisions that impact us financially, whether it be expense or revenue, that we at least record we understand that impact and we know what it will do to our budget. It should be our working tool, our guiding tool. And I'm sure that you'll hear Nick and me repeat that often. Before I get into it, I want to thank the Budget Committee. They had a lot of persistence and a lot of perseverance and willingness to work with us and allow us to do some extra legwork. The Executive Committee spent a long time on the budget, and I owe them a huge thanks for their diligence and patience, because you know when you go in detail and have new eyes looking at something, it really does help to improve the end result. And of course, our Nick. He deserves a whole lot of thanks. He's worked hard on it. He's done a lot of the detail work. He did a lot of the research, his kind attention to me, and just in general, his diligence and hard work. And Nick deserves a lot of gratitude for getting this pulled together. And Julene is not here, but she spent time with us helping us understand the History Gateway side of it, understand what's carryover, what's not going to be carried over, what's expected, what's not expected, and what's been done away with. And we'll convey our thanks to her. I would ask that everybody always be familiar with the budget. And as I mentioned before, we'll be monitoring it closely. And you'll hear me anytime we decide to do something that's not in the budget, that we recognize the impact of it. I'm going to go through the budget very quickly. We don't want to spend the time that the Executive Committee did on it. Trust me, that was a long time, but it was well worth the time spent. And I hope you will trust all of our hard work in getting it finally on paper into the final draft form. That's not to say that you can't ask questions or express concerns, and I would encourage you do that. Nick is prepared as usual to address any detail that we need. And in the end, we hope to adopt the final draft as the budget. If you will look at this document that says budget notes, we put this together so that you understand exactly what we're referring to. It's almost like definitions, but it's a good guideline. If you don't understand, like, for example, what do we call special events, it's explained in the budget note document. And then if you'll turn to the draft budget for 2015-16, that's this document that looks like this. And again, I'm only going to hit the highlights. Just note if you have questions or concerns, because we'll certainly address them, and stop me if you do. The first is the income, our operating income. This does not involve the gateway at all. This is just our operating income. We have two levels of donations, individual and corporate, that comes to a total of about $37,500. We have our earned income that comes from the ornaments, and here's where we have moved over from the History Gateway budget to our operating budget, the revenue from the license plates. And you'll see that amount there. So our total earned income comes to $281,500, of course, the license plate being the biggest donor toward that category. Special events, we expect to raise income from our special events in the amount of $30,000 for the year. And then we have our grants, and this has been given to us by our development committee. This is expected revenue to come from the grant development and receipt. Comes to about $85,000. Our investments, of course, earn us some income, and you'll see that our total investment income is $7,510 projected for 2015-16. This is a new category. We're going to be tracking in-kind donations as best we can, and not only track what we receive, but for the new budget, project what we expect, and you can see that we expect $27,000, and that includes our LA staff time, and it includes any pro bono work coming from our legal folks. So the subtotal on this page for operating income goes to $468,500. And if you'll notice, the $69,553, that was our operating income through March. We kind of stopped at March so that we could move forward with our drafting of the budget. Huge difference, but you can see that most of that difference comes from the license plates, the projected grants, and the events. Turning the page, we go into expected income from History Gateway, and here's where you'll see some rather astounding differences. And the first is, of course, the Pacific Wonderland license plates. 2015-16 shows nothing. That's because we've moved it over to our regular operating income. Beneath the Dome DVDs is a new item. We're expecting $486 there. Our investments with the Gateway revenue, total investment income is $1,600. And again, our in-kind LA staff time. So our total History Gateway, subtotal for History Gateway revenue is $36,000. A little over $36,000. The total for our operating category and for our History Gateway is $504,600. Then if you'll go down to the History Gateway expenses, you can see what the operating expenses are expected to be. We get a little more detailed here because we want to track items such as postage. Separately, we could have combined that. We could have had just one category, for example, for administrative. But there were certain items we felt it was essential to track. Postage, for example, if we have a major project, that can far exceed anything that we project.
I think she's meaning here.
Our total administrative expense comes to $221,000.
No.
We've got a new category, marketing and communications, and you can see those items that are expected. And then for some reason, mine jumps a whole page.
Yep,
I don't know why.
Yep.
Yeah, and then...
A space for the sun.
Yeah, I guess that is... Good idea. Special events, we expect to bring in up approximately $25,500. So our subtotal for operating expenses in this area is $308,500. We do have restricted funds. We call them restricted funds. We got the Walk of Flags, we got the Governor Portrait and Maintenance Fund, and we've got...
Hello? Did someone join us, or... Ed, great. Thank you, Ed. We're in the budget. Jerry's walking us through the draft proposed budget, and we're now under expenditures.
Page 4 on mine, Ed. I'm not sure what you're looking at, but it's page 4. We're looking at the restricted funds. You'll notice a new line item, and that's endowment. That's our projection to start an endowment fund of $25,000. That brings us to a subtotal of operating and restricted funds of $346,927. Under the History Gateway, again, you'll see... No, we're okay. You'll see the administrative expenses. You'll see at $89,500. You'll see phase two new projects, which is important for you to familiarize yourself with. And if you'll notice, some of those projects are highlighted as to whether or not if Oscar does not get approved. And we can expand on that if you like, but you know, this is the kind of the floating part. Nobody knows for sure where we're going to end up. Then our events that will be floated by the History Gateway. And then the next category are the phase one carryover projects. These are the projects that were approved and started for phase one, and we felt it necessary to highlight those separately also in the budget. And again, they are noted as to whether what will happen to them, whether or not they get approved through Oscar. So our total operating and History Gateway expenses come to $1,238,627. Yeah, it's big business, that's right. We currently have cash operating and History Gateway expenses less the in-kind, that will be at $1,177,627. That shows our cash flow will be in the red by $734,031.
That's big, it's big money.
It is big money. Nick, anything I left out you want to highlight? I went through it very quickly, but on purpose.
No, I don't think so. The only thing that I would add to that is the collapse in the income accounts doesn't mean that we're losing the detail for that information. It just means that it's going to be stored in Bloomerang, which is our donor software system. That way it keeps the budget clean, and we can keep that information in the software system, which then allows us to sort it, we can pull reports from it, that sort of thing.
Do you want to discuss the carryover issue that we're not? It looks like we're spending so much more in the coming year than we're bringing in, but we have these incomplete projects that were already previously approved, and it's just carryover. Just so if that raises any red flags with anyone, look at the budget note. It's a great addition to the budget, though, too, to have this. This. Now, the other thing that Jerry, I should point out that Jerry and Nick are preparing for us that we don't have yet is taking us out.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we do.
It.
Great. That's next. Thank you. Right.
Yeah.
So to the budget.
To
Tony.
Just a comment that you can expect carryover next time, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Because the projects don't get completed, even though they're approved.
Right.
They're always going to have some.
Right. We're budgeting for the full amount, anticipated full amount of each of these projects, too, and they may well certainly not all get paid out in the next fiscal year. I thought I saw a question.
I'm not broke.
Yeah.
Oh, Vern, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. AP, Ed? Ms. Thompson, proceed.
Okay, I don't think we want to take action yet on this until we've gone through the projections, which will help to answer some of those questions. Also, before we're finished, we want to discuss with you the investment strategy of the big dollars that we've got. We do have a lot of dollars, and that needs to be managed carefully. So if you'll go to the revenue projections and impact, that's this document that Nick so nicely put together for all of us. This carries you out 10 years. Nick, is there anything you want to highlight on that?
Well, the biggest thing that I would like to highlight, or the primary reason for putting this together, was to try to identify when the largest source of income for the foundation would stop. And that is the license plates. And we know that there is an end date. We only have a certain amount. So this is assuming that we don't go back and ask for more license plates to be approved. Now, that's a big decision. You can decide to do that 5 years from now or not. But what I was trying to accomplish here is, if we had the resources we have today and that's what we had to work with, how long would that revenue last? And so you'll see that based on the burn rate of the license plates since they began selling them, we would run out after the 2023-24 fiscal year. So roughly 8 years from now. That's not intended to scare anybody or be, you know, it's good information to have so that you can start planning now and get an idea of your main funding source, which is, I believe, 80-ish% of the foundation's income, and we can start addressing that.
It also helps to provide some benchmarks for additional revenue raising as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of course, this will be floating all the time. It's going to be changing constantly. But I think it's another piece that needs to be monitored at our meetings to see if we're on target, particularly if we begin to set benchmarks for fundraising. Any questions on this?
We might run out about the same time.
Yep. Any questions on the projection sheet?
No, it's useful to have. It's a great tool, I think, for our stewardship.
And it also speaks to, as I'm meeting and Jenny and I are talking to funders, we can say this is actually Oregonian support of our work, which is going to be probably one of your most powerful tools right now. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The number of plates that are sold speaks to that, because that's an elected decision by an individual.
I still would like to thank each purchaser of a specific Wonderland license plate for their contribution. Jenny. And then
we getting a regular report now from DMV on sales?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Nick. Bounce back and forth. Do you not have a mic over there? Okay, shoot.
We don't get a report that shows plates left, but I do, if I ask, I can get a report that goes down to as much detail as showing us plates sold per month in which DMV location. And that's how I was able to do, I just worked backwards and did the math and then developed an average.
Right, we were just getting a monthly check, and it was just a dollar amount and didn't tell us how many plates it sold. But we get the check, but we've gotten them to give us more information. Vern.
Well, I'm just curious if we, and this is Norm's bailiwick a lot, are we cultivating down the road somebody who's going to leave $1 million to the foundation? I mean, that would be a nice start to build an endowment fund.
Split it with you, Vern.
Pardon?
I'll split it with you.
Split the ask? Sharon.
I just wanted to share, after the day our last newsletter came out, and we had a story in there about leaving a legacy gift.
Yeah.
We had our first donor disclose and self-identify.
Oh, wonderful.
So
That's great.
She wants to be confidential at this point.
Super.
But, yeah.
Keep it that way. Jane.
We've asked this before. Is there any way we can find out who bought the plate and thank them? Do we do that?
Right. Not yet. We haven't got it.
Can we?
I don't know if we'd be able to get that information.
I can call the lobbyist and see what she says. So you want to send thank you notes to the people who buy?
Yeah, we'd like to be able to cultivate them.
And I'm sure the Historical Society would like to do the same thing.
The interesting thing is, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
please,
Ms. Thompson.
The interesting thing is that the license plate purchases have not nosedived.
Yeah, like the
other ones. Staying pretty even. And in our budget discussions, you know, I run into so many people who happen to see the license plate on a car somewhere, and they're totally unaware of them. And now they want one. And I think we're going to continue to benefit from that.
I'll make that call.
Good. Thank you. Orm.
I'm not sure the legality of it, but that's never stopped us before.
We just could have a lawyer.
Is there any reason why we couldn't promote with auto dealers? I mean, give them an incentive.
That's a great idea.
Well, in other words, if you check the box with a new customer on which plate they are asking you to get for them on their new car, we'll give you $5 to get them to check our box.
Oh.
Ooh.
Well, I'm not sure you'd even have to give them money. I mean, I've been advocating that we develop partnerships out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could develop a partnership with the Oregon Automobile Dealers.
Right.
And exchange for that. They get mention
in
our newsletters
mention.
And
okay.
Everything else. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a good way.
A year that moves more plates than any other one gets called
out
or something like that.
Because I had had a conversation with their director about 6 years ago, I think, when we were just pushing the plates. And the Historical Society had an exhibit in the park blocks along with the classic car show at the Art Museum to have a booth at the Portland Auto Show. But they couldn't, at that time, give us a table because we weren't on their list. And so it's a chance to do that. Now, Bruce Bishop had volunteered to go back and do the Concours d'Elegance at Pacific University again. But, again, he needs other people to volunteer with him. I know Frankie did that. And Fern, were you there? But several years ago, and we haven't been back since. So there are venues for more
I particularly like Norm's idea of hooking up somehow with the Oregon Automobile.
Yeah, so it's there for every, because that's right, every car, new car purchase has an option of what kind of plate you want.
Yeah, that's right.
Good.
That's right.
So let's pursue that. Perfect. All right.
In fact, Tony. They arrange for that for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Dealer does.
They come back to them, they put them on for you to keep the relationship going. Hey, great new plate we're putting on here. Thanks for supporting.
Could be beneficial to both sides.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And we can target some of the older.
Of course, they cover up some of the plate with their little thing they throw on the plate.
Well, yeah, they do. I noticed
I'll
that.
Take that off.
But you can take that off when you get
home. I need to take that off.
It's okay. Then the money
So this is helpful, and it's good discussion on the plates because that's a way. Why don't we just pause and thank Ms. Lang for passage of the license plate bill?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It passed itself, actually.
Yeah, it really did. That and John Huffman on the House side, and I think it was Ted Ferrioli on the Senate side. So we've got to thank our members as well. So, Jerry, do you want to go through the Tony's analysis of investment capital before we adopt the budget?
But that's my question to you, Mr. Chair. Would you rather handle them as two separate items or one?
Let's do two separate items.
Okay,
the budget is momentous. I guess I would have one comment, and that's about personnel. And this is as good a time as any just to lay it on so that you're aware that several of us are working on a model that will get us at least into the transition as a unified 501c3 and well-staffed through the next couple of years. as we grow in both our development activities, our gateway activities, as we move out of this building, as the renovation proceeds, et cetera. No, so what's going to work best in the short run that sets a stage for a better and complete staffing in the future as well? And so well, the figures that Jerry's committee has put in here are tentative, and but they are probably on the, we hope, on the high side at this point as we proceed. We're trying to be prudent and not add staffing where it's not, when it's not necessary. Your chair's predilection in this regard is to get us through the September 1st transition and into operating as a 501c3 integrated entity, and understanding through our retreat in October, and I will be inviting some discussion of that later in the agenda, of what we undertake in the coming year or two and what we aspire to. And I think that will also help us decide the level of staffing we'll need and when we need to retain it. Mr. Duncan.
Mr. Chair, since it's my last meeting, I would like to move adoption of this budget because I think the figures are just absolutely fantastic. We're working with big numbers instead of two-digit numbers. It's just fantastic.
It's bigger than when you started. Is that what you're saying?
I move the adoption of the proposed budget.
Thank you. Thank you, Vern. Is there any objection? Any amendments to the budget? Hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Woohoo!
It's really,
thank you, Ed. AP?
Really,
AP might be on mute, or are you, AP, are you still there?
Hi.
Okay, great.
Still here.
Good, because you'll want to hear this next item, and that is, and I don't know that we have it online, do we? Nick, have we gotten
probably
this?
Probably not.
All right, Ed and AP, there's a document just passed out today. But let's see, AP is on budget and finance, maybe? I don't know. It's an investment strategy recommendation by Mr. Meeker, and Ms. Thompson and Mr. Meeker will walk you through it, so that I don't think you need to have it in front of you.
That's what I was going to say, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
By the time Tony is through explaining it, I think it'll be abundantly clear, and they won't need a document in front of them.
Good.
Just a little background on this. We're sitting on a lot of money, and what do you do with it, and how do you get the best return on it? And Tony has brought that subject up at every budget meeting we've had, and Fred and I conferred and agreed that Tony, with all of his expertise, would be the right one to come forth with the strategy for us. Tony so willingly did it. The budget committee did adopt his recommendation and asked that it be passed forward to the full board for consideration. So with that, I'm going to ask Tony to explain this to you. The one thing that excites me about it is some of you were aware of us trying to get a piece of paper to change signatures for the investment held by Fidelity. It took me, it took Fred, it took Nick, I don't know how many, just to even get the attention. And when you called in, you got put into a pool of agents, and it was horrendous. And, you know, when you're dealing with investments, you want to be able to move things as quickly as possible. I think what Tony brings to us will solve that problem. With that, Tony?
Okay. We currently have assets deposited in two banks, two national investment management firms, and the Oregon State Treasury. All of the deposits, and I want to underscore this, all of these deposits are managed by us. We're the managers. That means we have all the fiduciary responsibility. We should be watching it constantly, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's become clear that we've got enough money now that we shouldn't be doing that. So I looked at a number of investment options that were out there, and which included some typical brokers and things like that, and came to the realization that we have someone here locally in the Pioneer Trust Bank that has a wealth management division. They've been investing money since time, and they have an excellent reputation. So I looked at what they charged, and they charge right in there what everybody else charges, and they do some things that are extra. For example, at the end of the year, they give you a 990 prepared investment review. So that all the auditor has to do is basically transpose some numbers into the 990. It's an excellent piece of material that we don't currently get. We also have a considerable amount of money that is invested with them already. All of the cash is over there that comes from the license plates, and it's several hundred thousands of dollars. They are paying us 20 basis points on that annually. No other bank is doing that today. In fact, I told the budget committee, I read that a Swiss bank recently decided that they were going to charge, you bring them $1 million, they're going to charge you to invest it for you. In other words, you don't get anything out of it, you have to pay them. Well, Pioneer Trust Bank is paying 20 basis points on over $500,000 for us right now. That's money that we would not get anywhere else. So basically there's two recommendations here, or three, that I suggest to you. One, that we go ahead and establish a $25,000 deposit with the Oregon Community Foundation and establish a fund with them. That's their minimum. Their charges are a little bit higher than Pioneer Trust. And you need to understand, when you give them the money, you've given it to them. You never get it back. You can't dip into that principle. It would take an act of their board of directors, which they said is very unusual. However, establishing a relationship with them could be to our advantage in collecting other assets. The second recommendation is to establish $100,000 plus account with Pioneer Trust Bank, and they will manage it according to their internal investment policies. So basically what we would do with these two recommendations is hand over our responsibility to two entities, the Oregon Community Foundation and the Pioneer Trust Bank. They would act as our investment manager. We would no longer be managing those assets. And that's what we should do. The funds that I suggest we transfer to Pioneer Trust is the Fidelity Investment Portfolio, the Dodge & Cox Portfolio, and in September, the State Treasurer's Portfolio. We would then be earning whatever Pioneer Trust Bank can earn with those assets on an annual basis. Then we should continue our relationship with the Bank of the Cascades for our daily cash in and out, and the balance to Pioneer Trust Bank in that 20.20 basis point account that they're earning for us. We have one CD with them that's earning 0.25, slightly higher. My final recommendation would be then after we have established a budget, which we just did, we go to the Pioneer Trust Bank and say, by the way, we have another $300,000 that we know will be with us for a year. What do you recommend? Mm-hmm. Current interest rate environment tells you to keep everything as short as you can if you're going to spend it fairly soon, within the next 3 years. But really, we shouldn't be making that decision. We should rely on an expert, somebody that is watching it every day on our behalf, and that would be the Pioneer Trust Bank in this instance. So that's my report and my recommendation. The Budget Committee thought it was
a question. Well, let's. I know that this is going to take a formal vote of the fund board, which will be on the agenda immediately following the foundation meeting. This is the last time we will have that such a bifurcation. But I'm going to accept that as a motion.
For recommendation.
A recommendation to the fund. Yes.
A couple of other items. A relationship with them would also give us the ability to accept stock. So we would cancel our account with Fidelity. And so if somebody wanted to donate stock, Pioneer Trust Bank can accept the stock and convert it to cash on our behalf.
Right.
The other thing is that there's only one place now to do all these signatures. That is to our benefit. I can tell you the auditor is going to love this. because it makes it, when they go to check balances, they only have to go two places. They don't have to go to five or six. And so we'll simplify that process. I have not been able to clear with our auditor if the 990 report will save us any money with her. But it might. There's always that hope.
Right. All right. So Mr. Meeker moves that the foundation membership recommend to the fund board adoption of this investment policy. Now, I have Herb, Joan, and Norm. Herb and Jane.
Would you look at the math on A?
Are
all those lines?
2A.
2A, yeah.
Do they add up at a different number to you?
Yeah.
They do to me.
Good. What do they add up to?
Huh?
Well,
44 cents is the first one.
The last comment. Yeah, 2-1 and 1.
Then it's 18.
And then I'm assuming that it looks like you've added the, is it 25 also included in that, that
maybe.
Total?
Maybe 5
and
9 25.
Is 14.
This is 54 instead of 51.
12, 1,
I'm
9,
sorry,
10,
I'm not
11. Following. I have $112,498.44.
Plus 25. Oh, I've added the 25 in it. That's, yeah, take that away. Oh,
okay, but there's still some numbers over there on the right side that don't.
Well,
two or four.
Keep in mind that those numbers came from March 31, and they may not be accurate.
Okay,
today.
So it's the total that's accurate. Is that what
yeah.
we're having? Okay.
So, that's not. I think we're adopting a policy, not the
not these
exact
the
figures.
The
okay.
Strategy,
right.
Okay.
All right. Norm.
Four.
Oh, Joan. Okay. Joan.
As part of this. And part of the task that the governance committee was getting was to update an investment policy, which Mr. Meeker took a look at our proposed policy and is making some recommendations for some changes
right.
to that. We're not, since you guys haven't seen that, we're not asking for approval today, but we will be soon getting that investment policy out to you all. And depending on when it's needed for Pioneer Trust, we may have to do a phone meeting or something to adopt that, but
right.
But we'll get that out soon.
Who might
and
also
thank you. And thank you so much, Tony, for getting that done for us
yeah.
so quickly.
I think
well
we need
done.
To emphasize that there is a possibility that Pioneer Trust could ask for some minor changes in it,
right.
and we need to be flexible. In
right,
that
and that's the conversation that we'll have before we'll take it up. And sorry, Joan, but you were, Jerry and Tony and I were talking about this before the meeting, that the fund board would be able to have a telephonic meeting sometime this summer
okay.
after a conversation with Pioneer to proceed with an investment
great.
Policy
great.
That
okay.
that works with for them and works for
but
us.
But I'll probably go through governance
well,
first.
One example is the indices that they would budget recommend to measure their performance. You always want your manager to agree with the index.
Right.
Because that's how you watch them.
Good. Norm.
There's obviously no deposit insurance at these levels that we'd get anywhere.
Nope.
Right.
Just want to make sure we're clear on that. Their FDIC limit would be hit early.
We could ask them to do a joint transaction with other institutions to get there if you wanted to do that. You would lose your 20 basis points from doing that.
Yeah. I'm always concerned that we're depositing publicly acquired money in a private investment scheme. So it whatever it would take to give the public confidence is on my mind. Secondly, I see no reason why we couldn't create our own endowment document and pick up a number of basis points on a fraction, I guess, of a basis point on the put the endowment with them as well is what I'm suggesting.
You're right. However, there seemed to be some real interest in establishing a relationship with the Community Foundation.
In fact, I would tell you we operated under the opinion that that decision had been made. That there would be the endowment fund through the Oregon Community Fund.
That's what we told people when we sent out the letters.
It doesn't mean that you couldn't create a different endowment
exactly.
fund at Pioneer later,
right.
Norm.
You know, well, I've seen organizations do that too.
Before we put money in anything, I think we ought to know what our options are. And
yes,
we went down
you.
A road that was a single option road.
Yep.
And Tony's presented something here that is trustworthy. It's just it's probably as solvent, and we don't have an obligation yet because I don't think we've signed a contract, nor have we delivered money to anybody.
Would you be more nervous all of a sudden?
Well, I think the point there was that we have an obligation to the donors if we made some assertion in our solicitation.
I think you could go back to the handful of donors we have at this point. It's not a big list.
Yeah. That's quite possible. That's
if
right.
There's an advantage.
Norm, my preference would be to do that, but
right.
I was kind of following the trend line that people had established. They're getting the money.
The trend line, I think, it has some cachet to it because people have heard of it and it's gotten big, and
right.
So it goes. But there's nothing, I'm just asserting here, that says you have only one option for an endowment fund.
Absolutely correct. In fact, that $114,000 or whatever it is an endowment, in a sense.
Yeah.
It's permanently invested in long-term assets.
And Mr. Chair?
Well, to this point, Jerry.
I totally agree with what Norm's saying. I mean, I've been bothered. I don't know where the decision came from that we were going to do everything through the Oregon Community Fund. But I have to say that the one advantage I see is that we partner with something that belongs to the community of Oregon. The rest of it, to me, is more advantageous on the other side because it lends us flexibility. It gives us more opportunity to earn. We don't lock up any money, and I just would like to see some, if we haven't gone too far on the other, I'd like to see us give that some consideration.
I understand that there are conversations with each of the foundations we're seeking grants from, including Oregon Community Foundation, and although this is for the record here, so if there's no...
Doesn't impact that.
We shouldn't, okay. All right. So this is a healthy discussion, but I want to make sure that we recognize Jane. You had a point to...
I just wanted to say that having worked with the Pioneer Trust people at the same time mm-hmm. that we were trying to work with the Fidelity people, that they are, even if the other people hadn't been so obnoxious, the Pioneer Trust people are really nice to work with. Really nice.
It was the whole issue of the not being able to get any meaningful response from Fidelity came from when we were trying to accept stock and finding that it's just they weren't at all responsive or flexible or and we still don't know quite which forms we're supposed to be filling out and where to send them. So it's ridiculous. Joan.
I guess I am curious as to your thoughts on, is there a benefit, however, to spreading some of our wealth and working with the Oregon Community Foundation because they are so well known to people throughout Oregon. And so putting at least a small amount and developing that relationship there makes some sense to me. Or, well, it's not small, 25,000, but smaller than our other. And then maybe creating another endowment with Pioneer Trust. It's a thought.
Let's see. Sharon, I'll get you in a second. Jerry?
Mr. Chair, can I recommend that rather than get hung up on this
yes.
now, I think there is a consensus that it needs to be looked at. Can you ask a group of people to take a look at it and come back with recommendation offering up pros and cons for both directions?
I will. And I'm actually going to delegate that to the Budget and Finance Committee in coordination with the Development Committee.
Okay.
And so the two chairs are nodding their heads. My sense is, my understanding is, we don't have the 25,000 yet. We'll get a report on that soon. We're getting very close, but it's right still, it's in the checking account at this point, and we haven't made a commitment yet to send it to OCF at this point. So we have time, but I would like to move on it as quickly as possible, and that maybe could be a topic of the fund board meeting that's going to ensue on the investment policy as well, that they're not not unrelated at all. Sharon, do you have some insights?
I was just going to say, I have access to, there's research nationally and within the state of Oregon about the pros and cons of a nonprofit having a fund at the community foundation versus private. And, you know, and so I would be happy to share that information if it would be helpful.
Excellent. Herb, did you have a?
Just a quick one for, it sounds like with the accounting data that we're going to be getting from Pioneer that could our audit fees go down?
I've been trying to get hold of our auditor to ask her that question, and I've been unsuccessful. Right. She has been extremely busy.
Haven't
exactly
the paying a premium either.
No, I was going to say we're not on the top of the workforce.
No.
We're probably getting a $2,000 or $3,000 discount.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So we still do have a motion before us, and that is to adopt this, to recommend this investment policy to the fund board. Any further comments?
It's not a policy.
It's a strategy. Thank you. This recommendation of a recommendation to the fund board. AP, Ed, any comments?
No.
Great.
So, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Wrap the gavel.
Yes.
The recommendation that comes to us is pretty specific, and we're now recommending that document to the fund. And I would ask for your guidance on how you're leaving this other question of where the endowment would reside, because that is the recommendation, which is following on our prior narrative.
Thank you.
But
yeah.
It's not necessarily locked in.
Good point, Bill.
With item number one held in abeyance until the two committee chairs have had a chance to make a recommendation. And that item one, I'm sorry, AP and Ed, the item one is that specific dedication of the $25,000 to OCF as an endowment fund.
So you're pulling that back right now?
Yes.
Couldn't you just...
It will not be voted on.
Just amend...
Yes.
The strategy document by deleting with the Oregon
sure.
Community mm-hmm. Foundation.
Sure.
Yeah.
And as a note in the minutes, having the chair direct budget and development to provide some additional analysis of.
Mr. Meeker accepts that as a friendly amendment.
So the motion includes just item two.
No, it's item one and two.
It corrects item one.
$25,000 endowment.
We're going to establish an endowment, but not leave out the dedication to OCF.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we definitely are going to have an endowment fund.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a good
And it doesn't
catch.
Need to be $25,000 either.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason it's $25,000 is because that fund requires that as a minimum.
Minimum.
Exactly. The Pioneer Trust would not require that minimum.
No, in fact, they've said for you folks, there's no minimum.
Oh. Yeah.
So we could have the endowment fund sooner than later,
yeah.
And it might be open with a lesser amount. And quite honestly, I hate to see anything that says we're capping out at $25,000.
Oh, well, yeah.
We want to establish an endowment
right.
fund
and
maybe even articulate a goal that within 5 years will be $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mr. Meeker accepts that as a friendly amendment, striking the dollar million. Specific amount. Right.
Should we remove the word established? No.
That's
all right.
That is an established.
I think we've reached a nice approach to this. And is there any?
I would just. Think, I just want to make sure what down. One is saying: establish and fund an endowment with an entity advantageous to the State Capital Foundation.
In spirit,
after examination by a committee, or is that what we're talking about?
That now? Is.
Don't you want to just establish an endowment fund?
Yeah, I think we're just leaving establish an endowment fund. We're waiting for how the rest of that is divisible because it's
endowment fund.
All right, that is not an amendment to the motion. Is there any objection to the motion before us as amended? Hearing none, adopted as a recommendation to the fund board, and we will take that up. Anon. Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, AP.
I need to dive off for about an hour or so.
Okay, I will need you for the fund meeting. Joan's going to take us up on the Articles of Incorporation and Bylaws, so
okay.
Just for your information.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, AP. Well, All right. Now, that's one committee that's been doing an awful lot of work, and we've gotten through that. Now, let's turn to the governance subcommittee and all the hard work that Vice Chair Joan Plank has been doing with her committee and her lawyers and her...
Okay. I think seen the list of policies, the entire list of policies that we're dealing with over the next few months with the change as a result of House Bill 2037. And again, kudos to Ms. Ginny for getting that through the legislature. We thank you very much. What we decided to focus on for the most part were, well, there's the policies include governance policies and development policies. And the, strangely enough, the development committee is dealing with the development policies and the governance policies committee is dealing with those. We've also prioritized them include things that we need sooner rather than later. And so the two most important items that we need sooner are the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws for the new 501c3. So it's actually, again, it's the fund board that will need to adopt these effective September 1st. As with the budget and the investment policy, we want a recommendation from the board to look at these. So what we did is we started out, just a teeny bit of background, we started out with some draft policies, bylaws, articles of incorporation. The governance committee reviewed them, and then we went to our Miller Nash attorney, Mr. Bill Manny, to get his input after we had things in the best shape that we could. And the basis for the original policies, Ms. Lechte helped us with, based on best practices from nonprofit organizations. So that's kind of where we started. We had a great meeting with Mr. Manny last week, Sharon and Fred and I attending. And we decided that he recommended that we let him draft the Articles of Incorporation because he took a few things that we had in the bylaws and put them in the articles and told us what else we needed in the articles. And so we will ask Miller Nash to file the Articles of Incorporation for us at the appropriate time. So you all got a copy of these. We tried to get these out last week. I'm not intending to go through them if you have questions about anything, but they were essentially put together by the attorney's office, so I'm comfortable with how they're written.
Then let's take these up one at a time, you think?
Okay.
Because Articles of Incorporation is a organic document. It is who we are. I want to also thank Lou Hampton for the work he put in to get us established as a 501c3, and the fund establishes a 501c3, soon to be all of us, come September 1. Thank you to get rid of this crazy bifurcation. But Bill Manny had since, in those, that was 10 years ago, pert near, and the laws come a long ways, and I think recommendations of how to keep them simple and clean and still comply with ORS Chapter 65 and federal IRS regulations is what you have before you. I want to remind everyone that, because this took a conceptual leap for some of us to, because the bill is written that come September 1, the foundation is to create a 501c3. And Dexter, Legislative Council, understood that we would simply be transforming the fund to the foundation. And so that is why these are amended and restated Articles of Incorporation and amended and restated bylaws. And we will file them pronto, as soon as they're adopted by the fund board. But they don't take effect until September 1. And so we have some other nuances of getting to September 1 that will take up when Joan's through with their policies, and that'll be this issue of transitional election of officers. So that's to come as well. But we want to get you all through this as expediently as possible. Any questions about the Articles of Incorporation? Norm.
A couple of points. Do you want to...
Oh, go ahead. Go.
The points would be that there is a section, and I believe it's Restrictions Article 5, and it talks in pretty much boilerplate language about prohibitions on campaigning, lobbying, advocating, and so forth. And that is within what now is the 501c3 guideline that I believe is in effect up to about 20% of your total budget is the cap on the expenditures you can make in advocating. So I want to make sure that we still have our proper role in advising the legislature and bringing them our best thinking in their behalf. That's point one, and I think it's covered. Article 7 on indemnification, again, it will probably...
12, Article 12.
12.
12,
It probably makes sense to consider directors and officers' liability insurance for this organization at some reasonable level. Now, many of us, usually when you're on a nonprofit board or doing nonprofit activity, your homeowner's liability policy probably has a clause in it that protects you in that regard. But if you have any doubts about where your $1 million is right now and how it was handled and whether you met your fiduciary responsibility, the cost of defense of answering that question might be more uncomfortable for existing or future board members.
Right. Joan has addressed that,
Thank
Norm.
Thank you, Norm, for raising that, because it is an important consideration for us. One of my next tasks is to work on the directors and officers insurance. We got some information from Miller Nash about where to go. I've got a form that I'm working on filling out that is a tad over my head in some cases, and so I'm going to need some assistance. Brian Doherty gave me the name of a woman who can help me kind of through that process, and so, like I say, I'm going to be working on that July, August.
But I'm happy to
We have time, I have it with me, so you might be able to help me answer some of those questions. But, yeah, thank you for raising that.
And you've got the $2,000 in the budget to support that.
Right,
and we have the money.
It's in the budget, it's on the agenda, and we'd hope to have it in place by September 1.
That's the plan, yes.
Yeah. Herb.
Just nitpicking. I mean, it's always been the object of the foundation to take care of the capital. In Article 10, if something were to happen to us, can that be distributed exclusively to the Oregon State Legislature, so it's staying in the legislative branch?
No, that's no. I'm
can't
pretty
do
sure
that.
State law.
Don't want to do that.
Don't want to do that.
It'll get spent for something else.
But this way it goes to DAS, and I know it's going to get spent on something else.
I'm thinking not. My preference is to stick with what the that's language that he put in terms of.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that we can direct that. The state of Oregon's going to decide that should we dissolve. And I've worked too hard to get this this far to even contemplate that at this point. But you're right. You're right to raise it. But I think that I don't have Chapter 65 in front of me, but I think there's a statute that deals with the dissolution of charitable corporations, and it just escheats to the state of Oregon.
And it is something that.
But the legislature could grab it if they wanted to.
You can designate any charitable organization that has a similar purpose. So if there's a successor that revitalizes 3 years later or something like that, but if you give it to the state of Oregon, it's gone.
Yes, well, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right.
So I think it is worthy of thinking about.
Yeah.
And this is different than the draft. We had it in the bylaws, and it exactly said what Norm just indicated.
Yeah, yeah. But this is, that's for future, I think, future contemplation.
Okay.
Should the specter ever raise its hoary head?
In that time, okay, yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Any other comments on the Articles of Incorporation?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I just make the assumption that Article 6 is the address of our attorneys.
Yes. Yes.
They actually provide that service. They have an arm that provides that service.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we,
yeah.
They'll be around forever. So that's
yeah, that's MN is Miller Nash.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Now, we do need to take formal action on this because the bylaws of the fund say that the fund can't amend its documents without approval of the foundation. So Ms. Plank moves that the foundation membership approve and recommend to the fund board these amended and restated articles of incorporation. Any further discussion? Ms. Thompson?
Well, I thought I heard Norm ask the question, and the answer was, yes, it's worth looking into, and that's the direction of should they be dissolved, where does the money go?
Right.
And I would appreciate that the, I guess what I'm looking for is that it be contingent upon whatever that direction is.
My sense is that we wouldn't concern ourselves with that at this point or even at our October meeting, but that these would be the document. This is the articles of incorporation that we file with the Secretary of State, and that we defer that issue to a rather later time.
What?
Well,
I just caution the group that once you, then you would have to refile your governing.
Right. Well, that's not an issue, but
an option saying, you know, we would review this again with our attorney and based on his judgment approve it.
I guess the question I have is why not do it now before this is finalized?
I guess the reason is
we'd like to get them signed today so that we can forward them to the attorney and get them filed.
The process of amending the bylaws.
But if we have to, I don't think that's a huge effort.
It's a refiling, and then you have to file with the IRS and the Department of Revenue.
You don't file with them until you file your 990.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. And we have till next spring to file our 990.
And our financial institutions would probably have to have it as well.
Right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What gives me pause about the state of Oregon is we have spent all of this time to get away from the specter that a contributor's money could end up back in the coffers of the general tax fund. I mean, even if you put the common school fund, it would make people feel better. but to just generally have it as cheap back to the state of Oregon, that's if we make no plan. But if we, and you're right, we could, as we saw some dark cloud hovering over us, quickly amend our articles to say that it could be given to any bona fide charitable purpose within the state of Oregon that has a similar mission. But I do think that we are putting right here in bold print that your money ain't safe with us.
Right. And at the same time, we're trying to get our money out of the state treasury.
Yeah.
So what kind of...
Jane.
What if it can, as the lawyer say, we could say that it shall be distributed for the purposes that are mandated in the statute for the State Capital Foundation? That's pretty, unless that gets changed, that's pretty specific.
And we could probably get Bill on the phone, actually run this by him and vote on this after lunch.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I'd suggest.
Okay. I mean, that's specific language that's in the statute for the use.
It would go
to the state of Oregon, but it would have to be for those purposes. Or to an organization. I don't know what the best wording
like
is.
But
yeah, I really think it could go to another nonprofit organization that has a similar mission. I mean, we're talking about the end of the world scenario here. But if the end of the world is it all goes to the state of Oregon, is that really the best result?
Okay, so to another nonprofit with...
Can you call Bill now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we need to take up Mr. Hayden here. Let me put this motion aside temporarily. We will have some attempt at telecommunication with Bill, maybe even an email.
I'll call and see how I do.
Want to call him and see. And I'll pull up Chapter 65 while Mr. Hayden brings us up to date on Oscar and the building.
At my cue.
Ta-dun-dun-dun.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for
good morning.
Having me here this morning. Marina Criswell would normally give this as our project director, but she is off enjoying some well-earned vacation right at the moment, so I have lots of her notes and some feedback from the executive committee as far as some things that might be of interest for you. Primarily, the team has been working very heavily on the temporary capital and starting to get ready with the City of Salem, working on permitting process, working on reviewing the site plan, which will involve a public comment at one point. The building permit was turned in. That's dependent on the whole site plan process. And I would ask a question of Mr. Kolom. Have you heard anything from staff at the Capital Planning Commission? Because after I told you at the executive committee meeting that they were going to put the July meeting back on, they have gone silent on the line, so I've been trying to track them back down.
I have not. I'll check my end if you'd like me to.
Okay. I just was wondering if maybe you had heard something and they just hadn't given me the feedback, so I'll push again this afternoon, because there will be the City of Salem's Capital Planning Commission involved in the 550 project specifically because of the temporary structures that are going to be built on the site. We're not changing the use significantly enough because it's still for government use, but the fact that we're going to be changing the visible appearance of the area is of general concern. So one of the things that we talked about at the executive committee meeting and that people had said was that they had not seen kind of what the general plan for 550 is, so we wanted to let you know what we've been briefing everybody here about. So if you can look at the screen over in the corner here. If you're familiar with 550 Capitol Street, the current structure is this main building right over here. We're not making any changes to the exterior of the building, but you can see that out in what is now half of the parking lot, we're building some temporary structures. Those are two-story structures on the left, which will have the hearing rooms on the ground floor, and the basically committee services and LFO on the second floor. And then the chambers are on the right, and that's a breezeway, and there's a little bit as we move through this. Since this is not mine, we'll go to the next one. Wrong one. Not my computer. Maybe if I press the right button. There we go. So this is incredibly small. So the ground floor or the basement will primarily be staff at the
Question. We're talking about the transportation building?
No.
PUC building.
No.
What people talked about is PUC, the old corner. Sears building over at the corner of Capitol and Marion.
Right across the street.
No. This is at the other end of the mall up by 12th Street, almost straight across from Safeway.
It's the old Sears retail store.
It's the old Sears
from the
building.
60s and
70s. It's the, most people refer to it as the PUC building.
Yeah, that's where the PUC was.
Hey, I'm
not
sorry.
It's not on the mall.
Yeah, it's not directly on the mall. If you know where the red parking lot is right there on 12th, and it's right across the street from that. So it's about 5 to 6 blocks from here right now.
All right, thank you.
At the north end, Ledge Council, you can see the amount of space. They've kind of tried to draw out what it's going to look like. So it's going to be a very tight fit for everybody. We'll have in the basement, we'll have council, revenue, employee and financial services, and IS all shoehorned into that square footage. Yes. That's the face that most of the people who are going to be working there make to.
You move up to the first floor. The first floor is going to be primarily the Senate. So you'll have the caucus rooms, all of the member offices, and the member offices are going to be roughly about the size of House offices right now, maybe a little bit smaller, with just a little bit of room out in front of each one for staff. If you know the building, you know that there aren't a lot of windows over there, so you know it's not going to be anything like the digs that we have right now. I'm going to make this a little bit smaller, and I apologize for the size. This is the size that the architects give us. So in the main building itself, so this shows both on this side, this is the building as it exists right now, which everything in purple is the Senate. Over here, there are a couple of smaller conference rooms. What we've done is we've allowed space not for full-time occupation, but more of a hotel space for the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, and the Governor, to where each will have basically two small offices in there that they can have private meetings, sit while they're waiting to go meet with members, or someplace to have members or other people come meet with them. I believe the Secretary of State is moving in with some of their people who are in the Public Services Building, which is right across the street. Treasurer is going to be mostly moving into the L&I Building, and I have no idea where the Governor's going yet. They're still working on it. There are a couple of different rumors, but their staff has not confirmed any of that yet. We'll still have the State Police in the building with us. Nick and I will be kind of hidden down in this bottom corner. This is kind of the first step in a shared lounge. That will be the members' shared lounge in this area. There is a small existing cafe that's in the building right now. It will not be as full service as what we have now. We're envisioning food prep off-site, brought in and just sold as kind of a grab and go, because there's not the same level of preparation. We'll have some facilities. Visitor services will be right up here. Facility services, that's a loading dock up there, so there'll be some of their receiving and folks working out of there. There's the public utilities hearing room that's inside the building. That will be the largest hearing room that we have for the large joint committees. All of the other committees will be meeting out here on the ground floor of the modular buildings. We're building a breezeway that will be open to the elements, but secure at this end, so there'll be an exit, but it'll be fenced off. So because this is 12th Street, runs right along this side, and it will be coming right up to the property boundary as close as we can get on this side. So there'll be a fenced off right there. You can see the sizes of the two chambers, and the setup is pretty much what we're expecting, which is long tables and a chair for each member. No space for their staff to sit with them. You see a little bit of side aisle type staff seating in each of the chambers over here, and a very small gallery area in the very back that would be for public viewing actually inside the chamber. The vision is that while they are meeting, we will figure out which hearing rooms are open and be broadcasting the hearing rooms so that people who are at the building who still want to see would be able to sit in one of the hearing rooms. This area is called public access down at this end. Originally we envisioned that these would be breezeways too and open to the elements. We've since closed off this end because that's the southern end. Most of the wind and rain would be pushing in from that direction, so it would be miserable. So we've closed this off, so this is going to be completely enclosed. So this area pretty much makes up what is currently the gallery, or the galleria. So not a lot of space for large displays and lots of members of the lobby and everybody else who's trying to get in. It's going to be just as tight and cozy out here as it is inside for staff. One of the things that they'll be doing, and you'll see it here in one of the next ones, let me... That breezeway, there will be a connection, so they'll make a new door on the second floor so that there'll be a connection into the building, because that will allow us to use the elevators in the building for ADA access to the second floor, because outside we'll have stairs outside that you'll be able to go up if you want to come up to where staff is out here. But for anyone else that wants to use an elevator, they'll have access inside the building and then just come out and go back in. So we didn't have to engineer new elevators out here. The second floor is complete. In the building is completely the House of Representatives. Everybody kind of stuffed in there. Committee services, one side. LFO takes up the other. Facilities will be right here in the middle. And there's just a little bit of space in here also for the media to also have like hoteling. They will not have permanent offices in our space. You know, if we can't get space for the governor, treasurer, secretary, you know, we don't have space to rent out. So they'll have some hoteling space for the press corps in there, but that's about it. They'll be able to come in, sit down, write some copy, do a little bit of work, and move along. The chambers will be only one story, but they're building them so that they have a higher floor-to-ceiling height, so it doesn't feel quite so cramped as they're trying to conduct business in there. So this side will be modular buildings, so they'll be constructed off-site, brought in, kind of put together like Legos. That's going to be a temporary, just framed-out stick building, you know, built just like you would a house or something, but only as a temporary structure so that we just remove it. The goal is we'll sell the modular buildings when we're done and get a little bit of resale value off of them, and it's not a complete loss, and we don't end up owning a whole bunch of modular trailers that are, I'm sorry, fabricated buildings. I'm not supposed to call them trailers anymore. Every time I call them trailers, because it just sends the wrong signal. So these are a couple of the architects have started to do 3D renderings of what it will look like. So the main entrance as you're coming to the 550 building will be this plaza area right here, because on the ground floor, this is where the little cafe is. The main entrance will be coming in from this direction. So in this picture, what you're looking at is the plaza from the south and north into it. Again, not a lot of room for large gatherings, but there is a little bit of outdoor space, so that's in essence the front steps.
Is there a ramp anywhere there?
Yeah,
it will be fully ADA accessible coming in.
You see it on the right
from that side.
Okay. Okay.
What's on the right side?
What is a ramp.
No, what is?
That's one of the modular units, I think.
And so this is looking down what would be the breezeway. You can see that second floor access into the rooms with the chamber on the left side there. And then these are just a couple of other renderings that they provided for us showing what it's generally going to look like. And then again, this area out here, the parking lot, will be fenced off with controlled access. That we have roughly the same amount of parking as we have right now between the basement parking structure and the State Street and Court Street parking. So
It's going to be very, very limited parking in there during session members, during the interim. You know, we'll be able to, if you're coming to the temporary capital to conduct business, you know, we'll be able to let people park in there rather than having to give out parking passes and save a little bit of money during that time. We'll operate it just the same as we do the parking garage right now. So,
Kevin, what about the capacity around there for parking for visitors? Is that going to be available? I mean, is there street parking there?
Not a lot, because you're right at the edge of the.
That's what I thought. The corridor there.
The residential.
Residential parking. That's the word I was looking for. So the parking right across the street is the red, is Daz's red parking lot. About two blocks away is the yellow parking lot. So, you know, if you kind of picture where you are, you're at the outer edge of the mall area. So parking, we're envisioning most of our staff will continue to park where they park today and have to walk a little bit further. The public is still going to have to park kind of down in the mall area and walk a little bit further to get over there. There is not, even though parking is challenging here, over there, it gets just a little more challenging because then, you know, depending on how much parking is taken away by the construction efforts
the yellow
here,
and red are over
you'll
here,
lose right? some metered parking, but otherwise it's here, going
it's
to
on that side of the street,
gonna think shift over a little bit and be over on all those streets right there as far as what lots are available.
If you're going down 12th Street, okay, which side of the street is it on?
So if you're heading north on 12th Street, if you go right, if you come out right now and head up to 12th Street and head north, it will be on the left side.
Left side.
It's on the left side. So as you're going, there's a Safeway kind of right there, and it's just past the Safeway. You turn on Marion as if you're going to go out to West Salem. It's right there, 12th and Marion, and then Court or Capitol. So 12th, Marion, and Capitol go on three sides of it. And then who is it in that big building right on the other side? Oregon Health? Somebody like that.
Where are you?
Sure.
Yeah. Just on the other side of them as you're going down 12th. But
DHS, isn't it?
Yeah, DHS. That's
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah.
I knew it was Health. I
just there was an H in it, right?
Yeah, there's an H in it.
I notice you're trying to cram some space in there for the media folks, news folks. Is there any possibility that they could maybe rent something close by and share it and then give you all a little more space?
They will be renting space for their actual offices elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
That's just kind of a space for them while they're in the building to have someplace to sit down and conduct business. It's the same for the lobby. The lobby will be renting outside and kind of that public area on the first floor with a few little tables and everything. That would be their only area to gather and maybe sit and talk because we don't have all of the little phone booths and nice little benches and everything. You know, there's just not that kind of room in there. So they will be primarily be renting outside of the building, and then that's just what. When we're not in session, I envision that being used for other purposes, but during session, it gives them an opportunity to come in and sit and file a story and get out, so we're not totally kicking them out of the building.
Okay.
Which is not a good story.
I would like just to point out that we need to move exhibits to some other location. There's no room in this building for visitor orientation per se. And so we are contemplating, once Oscar goes through, and we wholly expect it to do so, that then we would be exploring with Jolene and State Parks and others how we might have temporary exhibit as close to the Capitol construction site as possible to orient visitors to the project as well as to the legislative process and per our regular. So, but that's a phase two item that's I think even addressed in the budget if Oscar does go through. And so we'll be happy to be working with legislative administration on that.
Yeah, we're,
come sine die.
I'm very hopeful that some of the current mobile exhibits that are sitting in the Galleria right now that we would have, because they don't all have to be together, that you'd be able to put them around and at least have some some sense of what's going on in that front entrance area, in the cafeteria slash gift store area, you know, maybe out in that Galleria area, depending on whether we're in session or out and what's all going on. There's a lot of operational issues that we still have to figure out, obviously.
Of course.
As we move through.
So any questions about the 550 building project? All right. Good discussion. Thank you. Very informative. Kevin and I will be working on a memorandum of understanding of how what our expectations are of his compliance with that provision of Chapter 35 Oregon Laws 2015 that says the administrator shall provide administrative support to the foundation. And so that's a job we'll be taking up shortly, as well as how we transfer the funds from State Treasury come September 1 to Pioneer Trust. Kevin.
The second thing that people asked for was to try to see what the current drawing of the...
Oh, good, the gateway.
Of what the gateway space is. So this is drawn in really close right now, and I'll come back to that, but just to kind of orient you a little bit to where it is, you can see currently this would be where the gift store is in this area, which will be new stairs, where visitor services is, the other set of new stairs, both going down to the new concourse level. So the gateway space is right here, directly off of the Galleria, and you know, it's not,
yes,
perhaps not the perfect space, but it's in a great location to be able to get people to come in. It does give a separation between on the back side here.
Oh my God,
that's fine.
On the front, an area for some exhibits, and on the backside, room for an orientation or a starting off point for tours or whatever else, what other uses that the staff has to do that.
Down below, right?
No, this is rotunda level on the main level.
Everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, that's the hearing room.
Okay, so. Yeah, okay, all right. In the courtyard.
Mr. Chair.
Corporation or code? I think corporation.
No, streets at the top. State streets at the bottom.
Mr. Chair.
Those are the A through F.
Fred.
I'm sorry. Sorry, we're trying. Jane.
I just wanted to say, from having looked at the drawings of that whole area, there's a big sense of openness, and there's the new stairwells have glass walls, and you can see back and forth into things, and so I think it will draw people into the gateway area. You can't really tell that from just looking at the architectural drawings, but it's kind of exciting. Some of us walked through and out of the courtyard, and it was...
Yeah, I don't have the 3D renderings of this particular one, but as Jane was saying, you can't tell it much from this, but these stairs, it's going to be very open to here, so it's going to really give you a good sweeping view in.
That supplants the whole dissolution.
From the first floor now, from the gallery, because they've raised, new hearing rooms. The courtyard moves up one level, so that you'll actually access the courtyard directly from the Galleria. So you'll be able to come in this way, which will perhaps make more of a draw. They're planning on moving the bronze, they're not gazebos. What are they? Down in the courtyards right now that used to be the exits from the building that are historic, they'll be moving those up one floor, and they'll become kind of the centerpiece of this, so that gives additional space, that there's a potential for use for exhibits or something on that side. Same thing on the gift store side, potential to exit through there and draw more people into the gift store and maybe make us more money there too. It really is. I mean, they've done an excellent job of trying to find space and optimize the workings of the rest of the building, this gives the square footage. If you zoom out just a little bit more, one of the other things that will be much easier to get to now, anybody that has been or really knows where the vault is in the treasurer's office.
Right there, upper left.
The treasurer's office will be getting smaller, and where the vault is up there, now you'll access through a door on the hallway here, and there's going to be a couple of conference rooms, on Indian Services, and access to the vault right there, so it'll be much easier for members of the public to be able to go in and look at the historic vault too. So it gives a few more opportunities if we ever want to enhance and exhibit that more. Any other questions about this design? I know this one's got a lot of information on it. It's very, very busy with a lot of stuff. But,
very exciting.
Are you at 90% now?
They just gave us the, what are they called, 60% ID documents.
Does anything change on that second floor in the governor's office area?
The governor's historic office and that whole suite we are not touching, other than perhaps some work on the windows if we need to do anything there, or if there's any mechanical electrical going through, because that was all redone post-fire. So we're not making any changes on the second floor to the governor's
suite. I often think that you move from being Secretary of State to a nice office to a little corner hole. In the governor's office.
Amen. Yeah. Talk about.
That's disgraceful.
It's like a closet.
It's terrible.
But it's all Myrtlewood.
What?
But it's all Myrtlewood.
And it does have a
toilet, but it's
on, right.
The other part is, because of the changes that we'll be making here on the first floor, is the Secretary of State's office will be moving down a little bit too, so it won't be the office that you're thinking of today. That office will be changing a little bit too.
Diminished in size.
The total square footage of the space remains close to what they have now. I don't know that specifically for the office. The office, the Secretary of State's office, is actually going to move right up to the top there against that window, and then the office suite is just right there. Kind of half of it right now would be where IS is, and half of it's where the back half of LRO, so it's moving just slightly up the hall.
See, I don't want to move. I like my.
So that it and the treasurer's office will basically be bookends on either side. Both of them are going to have the same square footage, have the same kind of look and feel as you walk into them.
All right.
Any other questions about that? We did. Marina mentioned the 60% ID documents. They were delivered, and we're going through the review of those right now. And other than that, there's nothing new or exciting from that world right at the moment, unless, of course, you read the Oregonian.
Well, that's news we all were aware of as well. But I think we can still look optimistically that come sine die, Oscar will be underway. And Mr. Wilhelms had a prior commitment that he couldn't get out of from 11 to 3 today, so it didn't seem worth making him phone in for the first hour of this morning's meeting. Thank you, Kevin. I'd like to
ask a quick Basilda question. I don't want to make a big deal about this.
Want to take it?
There was a beautiful picture on the in the Statesman Journal this morning of the gold pioneer taken by a drone that was right up there. It looks like you're looking eye to eye with the golden pioneer. My only problem with that is if that drone touched the golden pioneer, that the gold would come off in an instant.
I have other problems with it too. I wasn't particularly thrilled to see that picture this morning.
Okay.
It's a great picture.
That's raised security issues.
From a security standpoint, from a facility standpoint,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Not the greatest thing in the world, so we'll work on that.
Jane.
Some really good close-ups of the gold man that are in the website stuff that we've been looking at.
All right.
No-fly zone.
No-fly zone.
Exactly.
Well, there's flies all over this place.
Right
on
the observation deck.
Very good. I would like to continue to keep, with the Vice Chair's permission, the articles discussion in abeyance while we hear from Julene and Dr. Busey about the gateway progress. Meanwhile, be advised that the attorney has given us some new language on Article 10, and Nick is busy working at getting that available for us.
No, it's great.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Sorry,
Julene and Dr. Busey.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Chair Neal, members of the committee. Julene Poppinga, I'm the project manager for most of the projects for the Capital History Gateway Phase 1. We're here today to update you on the open projects. Dr. Busey is here. He is retained by the foundation to facilitate the interpretive messaging through the projects, and he's going to give us an update.
So we have three contracts let right now. We have one for exhibits publications, we have one for development of the website, and we have one for development of two videos. I'll take those each one at a time. The exhibit publication submitted their 35% submittal. We got feedback on that, and we sat down with the contractor and went through an extensive session providing feedback and providing direction. And so they're working on the 65% submittal right now. The videos, we have received the rough cuts. The rough cut of the virtual tour is being reviewed right now. And we're setting up a meeting with that contractor to go over those comments and to make some mid-course corrections in what they're doing. The website is at the point now where we have a meeting this afternoon from 2 to 4 to have the contractors basically going to work us through the website and how it works. So all three projects are progressing. We are optimistic that in the end they will be what we hope they will be, what we expected they will be. The only other work that went on with the Capital History Gateway is we met with a working team from the foundation to determine what was going to be in phase two. And I don't really have comment on that because that was essentially your work, but that was part of the Gateway project too. So questions?
Just the deliverables, can you remind us of what those were for the video and the exhibit? I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but for context for us.
Oh, yes, you do. So we have two videos. There's an introductory video, and that is basically, it goes on the website, and it'll be shown here, is to get people excited about coming to visit the Capitol. The virtual tour is essentially 8 or 9 chapters of focusing on different areas of the building, and the idea is that they will use objects and those features to communicate the key messages. So those are the two videos that are being done. The exhibits that are being done right now, there's one that's kind of a combination pathway of discovery. Can you find me? One is oriented to children, one's oriented to families. It goes in the self-serve orientation area, and it's to excite them about taking the walking tour. So that's being designed. Oregon, Never Changing, Moving Forward. That is the exhibit that is going in plan for room 148. It will be done in sections, as I understand it, so we can fit it into the new space relatively easily. So we've taken that into consideration. Telephone and booth exhibit is part of that. We have one that's called Oregon Land of Innovation. It was designed, if you can think about room 148, from the Galleria. And all you have is a door. And so the plan for that exhibit was to put exhibits right next to the door to attract attention there, to attract people into 148. well, if Oscar goes through, then we would retain that exhibit and put it over on the other side because we still need to attract people in. If it didn't go through and you choose to do a glass wall through to room 148, we wouldn't need the exhibit because people could see in there. So there's a little bit of things are a little bit in flux right now.
Yeah.
So those are all involved. They're also developing a simple visitor map. They're developing the self-guided walking tour, which if you go back to the strategic plan, I think it was called the Pathway of Discovery or the History Pathway or something like that. Well, can't you guys remember the and the State Capitol Discovery Guide, it's a companion piece. The Discovery Guide is oriented more for children. It's like a scavenger hunt, but it excites them about going and finding things. A trip planner, information that will go on the website to help people plan their trip here, make it easy for them, and Galleria signage. It was simply that simple signage that says Capitol History Gateway this way, restrooms that way. And again, that's in flux. It depends on what happens with Oscar. So those are what is happening with the exhibit and publications contract and signage.
I thought it was important everybody be briefed on that because as we're out talking to the community, this is your work and this is what you want to be promoting.
Statement of case.
So.
Right, and they're all great projects. I'm adopting a new term called Oscar Flux. Sort of like acid reflux, but don't lose any sleep over it yet.
Tums at our next meeting.
Yeah. So thank you. Any more questions of Julian or Dave? Thanks. Some of us will be joining you at 2.
We'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Very good. Lunches are here. I don't know that we've gotten the Article 10 incorporated yet. Language, fabulous. So why don't you pass that out now while we get our lunch, and then we can proceed. Can it be easily incorporated into the document that the fund looks at this afternoon?
As I was checking in with the chief clerk and the secretary of the Senate this morning on some event stuff, Lori gave me this and said, congratulations. Okay.
I haven't ever heard that discussion here.
I just wondered where they're
at. Very simple. You know, very simple.
Oh, I agree.
You know, they've got the Mark Gatfield space over there.
Yeah.
And with it, you're talking about exhibits.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to check it out on here because she said.
It's probably important space for Willamette, but they might also draw people onto the campus.
That's what it was.
It could pay dividends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
no,
I was thinking, or Hallie Ford. I was like so disturbed.
I wonder if the governor's going over there.
And they say the governor's office. I was like, what? Is there any space elegant enough?
Well, when everybody else is in a shoebox. I was trying to imagine this room right here in terms of its scale. You could get a 60-member assembly in a room size.
You could get an assembly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly it.
Whatever the master plan committee, you can get in the house.
Yeah.
And we were thinking maybe we'd put the house over in McNary.
Okay.
The lobby in between.
Well, yeah, here, I'll give you all about 60 seconds more.
Oh, gosh, you're generous.
Light's still on, so.
You got that. I told you about this thing with the Confluence Project and that story next month.
No, that's not the thing.
I almost sat in your chair.
That's all right. I'll share.
Isn't that chain with Mary Fella?
Oh, okay.
Well, anyway, I still have to.
This is better.
Yeah. Oh, water. I need water.
Most people sit at the LA Hotel.
That's better.
This is very fun.
Well, it was nice. It's just, I was...
Oh, that's much better. Much better.
Confluence.
It gives me some confidence. Wind up like the damn cultural trust and stuff.
Yeah, that's very good.
I got a call from a friend. People still think I'm in the legislature or something.
That'll never go away.
Forever.
That will never go away.
A call from a friend after they took my cultural trust. They said, what are they doing with my money?
Yeah.
I didn't send it for that.
Mm-hmm. But that happens.
I'm concurring. I'm eavesdropping, going, yes.
Public meeting.
I know.
Somebody, a friend of a friend.
I like this so much.
Good job, Joan. I think that meets
it. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's much better.
That's what it should be. I mean, this is suggested.
Good. Let's talk about whether we could, like,
without spilling. I made a Cobb salad the other night. It was fun.
I love to make sounds. Matter of fact, I've been living
that. I just don't. Yeah, I don't even turn the oven on when it gets over 85. But it's interesting trying to.
We lose Tony.
Accommodate.
Tony took off. He's going to call back for the fund meeting. He had other.
My son-in-law is living with us. Doesn't like cold shrimp.
Uh-oh.
I love it.
So now you got to satisfy somebody else's taste.
Well, chicken salad seems to work for everybody. He doesn't like fish too much, so salmon salad with my father's recipe. Well, so I said, well, okay, so you'll get a tuna salad. Oh, nice, because he'll eat tuna salad.
Yeah. To talk about
that. Tell her to give me a call and I can, yeah.
But Abigail, who was raised at home, will eat it all.
She knows.
Our grandson just prunes disease,
so he has to. Oh my gosh, yes. How old is he? 21.
All right.
I've got two friends that suffer from Crohn's disease.
Let's get back at it.
My daughter-in-law is in remission now.
I'm calling this out of abeyance and into obeyance.
Very good.
Boy, was that a nice try. That's a futile effort. But moving right along, Joan has corresponded with Mr. Manny, and he has pulled a rabbit out of the hat. with the language that you have before you, which would completely supplant the existing. Hello?
AP's back
on. Okay, AP. I'm just bringing in. I don't know. I can email you this new dissolution language of Article 10 if you would like.
Sure.
And because that is what we have before us. It's from Bill Manny, our Miller-Nash counsel. To replace the Article 10 that was distributed earlier. So,
so while Fred is doing that, I just want to tell you all, Herb and everybody else, thank you for insisting. The board is engaged. That's exactly how this is supposed to work. And I just really appreciate that you didn't just say, okay, thank you.
No. Best is yet to come. There's more.
I mean, that's how it's supposed to work.
It's supposed to work.
Okay. If you had a chance to look at it, I also, Norm and I both looked at the Chapter 65, and that provision refers us back to you can give it to any corporation under 001 sub 2 paragraph B, and this pretty much parrots that. Jane.
Norm likes it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Jane.
One of the things we were talking about was the concept that it would go to an organization that had similar interests or something like that. And I don't see that in here.
It says, as the board of directors shall determine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the future board,
okay.
Yes. We've got to believe, would have the mission at heart.
Okay.
Yeah, and give you the flexibility. I mean, because if you say similar mission and all of a sudden, you know, something changes.
Right. And again, that's just one option, and so this leaves it
Leaves
it open. And it does, and thank you, again, reinforce Jones, thank you, bringing up, it did seem a little narrow, to restrict to the state of Oregon.
This could go to
the maybe the Common School Fund. Was that where you had money?
Who knows? It probably caused it to kick, and we'd have to give it all back.
I just wanted to know what had happened is when his staff filled out the articles in corporation, that was the language that was in our original articles, and that just got brought forward instead of bringing, you know, that section should have been.
Yes, you said that.
So that I just
said that before.
We found that, so it's okay.
She did. Yes, she did. Yeah,
I heard her.
Okay. So.
Approve as amended.
All right. The motion before us is to approve the Articles of Incorporation with the new Article 10 and recommend them. They have to adopt them and approve them. And recommend them to the Fund Board for adoption. Any further discussion?
Did I make that motion?
Or did Norm?
Norm did.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah.
Works for me.
Yeah. Any objection? Hearing none. So approved.
Thank you.
Now turn to the bylaws.
Okay, so similar background on that. Worked through the governance committee. Came to us as best practices. We had Bill Manny review them and make some recommended changes, and that is what we sent out to you last Thursday or Friday, and we are asking for a similar motion on the bylaws.
So moved.
Any discussion?
Well done.
Yes, I mean, really, Joan's been cranking on this and had a lot of help. Thank you, Sharon, for your contribution, and the governance committee for subcommittee for yours,
and it is appreciated.
So the motion is to approve these bylaws and amended and restated bylaws and recommend them to the Fund Board for adoption. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so approved. Good job. Now, let me just explain to you, because you got a single sheet of paper that talks about the procedure that the Fund Board will take this afternoon to get these articles adopted and signed and filed. And I'm kind of calling it a bloodless coup in that we're going to merge the officers of the fund and the foundation today and proceed apace. One thing that this does to everyone's great satisfaction is eliminates the need for a September 1st meeting. And so that's in front of you, just transitional election of officers. It's on the agenda for the fund. And I promised Manny in my note at the bottom. Top of everything.
Oh.
All right. Here, read.
I trust you.
Read mine. again, as I pointed out earlier, we, the foundation members, must approve changes in bylaws. So that's. So I'm asking that there be some discussion and approval of these amendments to the bylaws of changing the names of officers and enumeration of officers of the fund this afternoon. It's been kind of tricky. Sharon and Joan and Mr. Manny and I have been trying to figure out, based on the existing bylaws and the restated and amended bylaws, how we get through this tangled web of, I don't want to call it merger, whatever.
Transformation.
And this is the script that's been approved by Mr. Manny gets us there. Any discussion? Okay. I do believe that we need Ms. Plank moves that we approve this procedure and recommend it to the board of the fund for their consideration this afternoon. Any objection? Hearing none, so approved. Ms. Bell, welcome. Glad you could join us.
So I have joined you. It's a work day. I've listened. The only thing I really missed was the screen. I couldn't see.
Oh, you could see us
PUC
from where you
building
were.
And all of that. But I have to say how really thrilled I am about the endowment. I think that's really a good way to go. The discussion about whether it goes to Pioneer Trust or to the Oregon Community Foundation, I got both sides of it. And my only question about that was, if it's okay if we go back to that, if we deposit $25,000 with Community Foundation, does that endear them more to us for future grants?
Apparently not.
No.
That is, we may not surmise that.
We may not surmise that.
It doesn't. We ask them.
Yeah.
I already knew, but we clarified that, Jenny, and I did on a phone
okay.
call.
Okay. All right.
When we talked to them just last week.
Other than that, I thought it was great.
There was no nuance, I gather, in their response.
No. I mean, they were.
They can't.
They were interesting.
They can't nuance it, but they can.
It doesn't.
Think about it.
It's, actually, they don't. It's two very separate.
Okay. Entities.
Animals.
All right.
And
so. Appropriately
okay.
so. Okay. Thank you.
But it was fun watching you, and I just think you should turn the microphones off when you get your lunches.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Well, we've kept Nick busy, and he's doing double duty, so he might. So now, Joan has a number of policies for us to.
Oh, do you want those now?
Okay. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It's going to be done.
Okay. There's three additional policies that we are. Asking to have adopted now so that they're in place for September 1. They are the conflict of interest policy with its accompanying conflict of interest questionnaire that people will be asked to sign on an annual basis, a non-discrimination policy, and a whistleblower policy. Again, all of these came from the best practices, went through the governance committee. We did not have the attorney review these because we're trying to save his time and not have him review every single policy that we do or looking at the legal ones. The next, well, let's stop there and then I'll tell you what I'm thinking about for follow-up. So.
Go ahead.
You guys got these with the rest of the policies, and so I guess questions.
The state has a standard policy, don't they, that office holders have to fill out with? Would it be easier for us to? Not easier. Okay, answer the question.
These are these are based on nonprofit best practices.
And what's recommended in Oregon, and they've been reviewed by.
Right.
Some trainers that do this around the state.
And the governance committee had some discussion of that, and we are not public officials with that, subject to those provisions.
We did read those, though, and brought up comments that we thought potentially could lead to a conflict, like how you define a family member. So we were diligent in that review.
Oh.
You want a motion to adopt them?
Well, I think we should adopt them one by one. And I believe that those
adoption of the Capital Foundation conflict of interest policy
and the accompanying
questionnaire on conflict of interest.
All right, Mr. Duncan moves adoption of the conflict of interest policy and the accompanying questionnaire, the motion includes recommending it for. Further for adoption by the fund board. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. So adopted.
Move adoption of the non-discrimination policy.
Again, and recommending it to the fund board for adoption this afternoon. Any discussion? Any objection? So approved.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the whistleblower policy.
All right, and recommending it for to the fund board for adoption this afternoon. That is the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you all for all the work on it and for the approval today. The next set of policies that I want to work on, we've done quite a bit of work on the finance policy. It just needed a little more work to enable us to get it out to you guys in a reasonable amount of time so you could actually read it. And so we decided to hold off on that. Mr. Meeker has recommendations for the investment policy. So those two will be coming. And then the third one I wanna hit next is the records retention policy, because that's one that there's a checkbox in the 990 that says you need to have that one. So that's gonna be the next approach. And governance committee, I might try a little different approach this time, and that is to send those out, ask for you to get comments back to me, and not try to have a meeting where we're all editing. So I absolutely want your input, don't get me wrong, but I just am trying to move things along, and I got good comments from you all before, and so if I have to make a separate phone call or something to have a talk with you or something, I'm happy to do that. So that's kind of the forward plan.
Right, Jenny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only add, as Development Committee Chair, that we too have had a set of policies assigned to us. There are a number of Development Committee members who are also members of the Governance Committee, so we've been having discussions in tandem. There are a few of the policies assigned to development that could be included, or at the very least we want to make sure are consistent with some of the language in the finance policy. So for that reason, you will not see Development Committee policies yet until we're sure that we've got either finance streamlined and inclusive enough to not have to have a separate set of quote development policies if all of the right topics are covered, but at the very least, as I said, make sure that we're consistent. So we may have some policies that we're going to use as drafts for a period of time, and then bring those to you at a later date.
I want to thank both Joan and Ginny for following my imprecation that they do this in phases and prioritize all these policies so that we wouldn't be buried under a ream of new novel concepts and policies to digest in one or two swell foops. I think we've made great progress. I think we're in a wonderful position to progress on both the development side and the governance side. And we have some other committee reports now to undertake. The nominating committee report you have in front of you, I believe, because it's the nomination of officers to the fund, and the foundation, does not need to take action, I believe, on accepting that. You've approved the bylaw changes and the plan for transition of officers. So that nominating committee report from Gary, and he was very responsive in getting it out to us after we talked to the attorney Lee last week and figured this out, will be taken up by the fund board. Executive committee report. What we did in lieu of having an executive committee meet to approve funding for the Tom McCall Day bill signing commemoration with members of the McCall family and the McCall administration in the governor's conference room, where instead we just had a meeting of the fund board. But FYI, since our April meeting, the issue came up as a plea to us to assist in making this a meaningful event for Governor McCall and his legacy. And we agreed it was within our mission. And the fund board adopted a motion to create a separate account that would allow us to sponsor special projects of this nature that were consonant with our mission, but perhaps did not fall into the legacy or gateway or diversity events that we've already budgeted our sponsorship for. And that wasn't pointed out specifically to you this morning in our budget discussion, but it's there. And it should be sufficient so we can be lithe in our response to precious new opportunities that arise for us to further our mission and to get our message out and maybe get on the good side of some new potential donors. So that's, I think, all that's happened that I need to... I'm not keeping anything secret from you. The committee's been doing their work. The executive committee didn't have to. And the building committee, you've heard from Kevin. I just want to point out that Gary has done a great job shepherding us on our legislative contacts to educate members on their responsibility to this building and to the people of the state of Oregon. And if you have assignments and you have, and I'm one guilty as well, I have not made all of my educational meetings yet, and time's a-wasting. As you can tell from the article in the Oregonian this morning, the politics, as always, thicken the closer we get to sine die. And so it's all the more imperative that we continue our education. Now, there's materials that have been produced by Gary, by Jane, by Fred, Neil, and have been distributed to you. Nick has copies of those in his possession. So if you want those, and you should have those informational items available to hand to legislators to obviate the misconceptions and I'd say distortions of fact that have been not overly prevalent, but has certainly been present in the press, and that that's a good educational tool, as well as our newsletter. So follow up on that. And, I mean, Gary has traveled thousands of miles in the last 3 weeks, and it's showing to meet with editorial boards and reporters throughout the state, Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, the coast, Southern Oregon, and it's showing. So I think that that will help eliminate some of the misreportage. All right. So kudos to Gary in absentia. History Committee, Herb.
Okay. We have or are in the process right now of finalizing a contract for our oral historian. We need to have five interviews conducted. And I'd like to offer anybody here that would like to give me the name of someone who really needs to be at the top of the list. We're going to be prioritizing those names. But if there's someone that you know of and there's special circumstances that we need to get that person right now, please let me know. If no later than the end of this week, because we want to get this contract out with the names associated with it to our contractor. The person we've selected, our oral and video history.
Okay.
We appropriated
that fund.
Okay.
All right.
The name of the individual that is doing this is Janice Dilg. She has an excellent reputation. We interviewed her here at the Capitol. We're very impressed with the way she's proceeding. She has a team approach. It'll be her plus a videographer, and we think we're going to get an excellent product out of her by that. We are asking her to start around the 1st of July and hopefully have five completed by September. And she thinks that's possible. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. November.
It was November?
Yeah.
You're right. We had first said, thank you for correcting me, November.
Give her a break.
She's been working hard. She wanted to get going on this. So History Committee will be meeting as soon as I can get the members together. We were hoping to do it this afternoon, but that's just not going to work. But I want to get a meeting hopefully by the end of this week, because we really want to, now that we have the money and the person, we want to get moving on this.
Very good. Any questions about the oral history videographer contract? Frankie.
You asked me to talk to media about getting the clip for Senator McPherson.
Okay.
When he was honored on the floor of the Senate, so that it could be put together with whatever else we have of his on land use.
Okay.
And Nick, I had it sent to Nick, and so he has that for our person if she sees a reason to put it together with one of the other.
What this person is willing to do for us is look at all of our old archived material that we have from the original project that was done in-house, and re-edit those for us so that what we have is more of a consistent library of the oral histories. That will not be, that's not part of this original contract,
right.
But we've talked to her about continuing on with this contract and taking on those type of efforts, and she sounds like she would like to do that.
Yeah. No, it's been, it was a delight meeting her and interviewing her, and she's very enthusiastic and has done some great stuff, especially at Portland State and women's history and the U.S. District Court. Historical Society as well.
I'd like to thank Annette and Fred for getting us going on this. Between the three of us, we've managed to work with our contracting department here at the Capitol and get things moving.
Sharon.
Remind me again of how we're going to distribute the oral history then and make it accessible to Oregonians. Is it going to, are all the students
That's a to be determined.
Okay,
but
so
right now she's going to do.
She's going
to go out and do approximately a two-hour interview, and from that develop a 10-minute oral history for us.
Okay, that's the.
And then from that we'll probably deliver clips for other use, but.
Right. So that's phase two and phase three then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The titling and format are some of the questions she has that Herb's committee has to undertake. With legislative media, and I think with Dr. Busey about how it's all consonant. I don't know that she has to do much of that as much as that we should have those tools on hand.
And we will have copyright for all the material that's collected.
Right. Jane.
Do we have Vera Katz up at the top of the list?
We tried and tried and tried, and we can't. Get her to do that, and we feel really bad about it. I don't know
maybe Phyllis
if you
Oster.
in your
come on, why I'm on the spot here. Judy Tuttle can help, and I'll call her.
We really need that piece of history.
I mean, this is
get at it soon,
right? Of course, understood.
And it's understood that in some of these video history collections, there will be an assistant in the room if that's needed. So it's not, won't be strictly a one-on-one. We just want to get the information that those individuals have for us and whatever it takes to get it.
Hey, development.
I don't know if you. Know if you noticed recently in the Oregonian a big article about her husband. I mean, a big article.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Former husband.
Her former cousin. Way down in the corner, it says he's married to Vera Katz. Married. It just barely mentions it.
That's what happens when you're
probably,
ex, huh?
Yeah.
30
yeah.
years.
Probably
yeah.
To the satisfaction of both parties.
He has a huge exhibit over at Hallie Ford right now.
Oh, that's right.
Right. All right. Any other questions to the History Committee?
Thanks. Good progress.
Development Committee, Jenny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Development Committee has
had several projects in the works. The first one, and the one I'm most happy to report to you about, is that we have successfully extended Sharon's contract until the end of the year, and I, for one, will be eternally grateful.
We're happy about that.
And we appreciate her work not only on development but on lots of other projects that we have been working on throughout our existence the last few months, so we appreciate that very much. Just a quick summary of giving for you, and this is for July 1, 2014 to June 12th, late last week of this year. So annual campaign, we had 84 donors. We raised almost $11,000 out of that, which we think is pretty good. We'll do better. This year, we'll be able to sharpen our focus a bit, but for a first go, I think we met our expectations. The Hello Again number of sponsors, donors, was 16.5, which is exactly what we needed, and I think we did okay on that effort. Event sponsorships in general, we ended up with almost 60 sponsors and raised a little over $62,000 from that number of sponsors. So I'm happy with that. An enormous outpouring of love and respect and admiration for Governor Atiyo. We had 77 donors for over $15,000 for that event and in his honor and memory. So those are wonderful. Miscellaneous donations that came in, so we count them as unrestricted. We had 52 for $8,600. So add to that some, I'll talk about the endowment separately, but I would say for our first real kind of planned set of fundraising activities that we did okay, and we'll do.
Excuse me, better than okay. You guys rocked.
Okay, good.
All right,
thank
please.
You. Thank you. We did great, and I appreciate all of the help that that we had from all of you and the support for this experiment that we launched a year or so ago of going forward with a more designed, strategic look at fundraising. So thank you for that. So the endowment is actually very exciting, and once again I would thank all of you who have made contributions in behalf of yourself or your families to this effort, and to those of you who have volunteered to make contacts with others. We are sitting right now at just under $19,000. That represents 22 contributors, 9 of which are self-starters who read the newsletter or heard that we were doing this, and they just wrote a check or made a contribution.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it really is fabulous. And considering that we started this in March, I would congratulate all of you because people are excited about giving to this organization. And so I think that bodes well for the future. It is one of the things that Sharon and I'm now moving to the next topic, have talked to potential funding sources about. They seem quite impressed with what we've been able to do and how we're moving toward a less, less dependence on public money, that we really have skin in the game and are making efforts to find contributors who will make us successful. So the final call that we had last week with the Oregon Community Foundation representative was very positive. We got lots of great feedback from Megan about her organization, as well as suggestions for us, one of which was tell the license plate story a little more clearly, because it gives comfort to these private foundations that it isn't exactly public money. I mean, these are individual contributors who are making a choice to have a Pacific Wonderland plate, and they know that their money is going to one of two great organizations. One of those is ours. So I thought, I mean, for me, that was a little bit of a wake-up call, because we do need to find a better way to explain to people that we're not just getting a general fund appropriation and then coming out and asking them for additional money on top of that.
And I've already addressed it. We wrote all that last night, because we're writing it at the end of a grant. So
that's great. And I'm going to let Sharon talk about the tinkering with the game plan for the next newsletter. We decided to push it out because we'd like to take advantage of knowing what the end of session deliberations bring us on Oscar and some other stuff. So I'll give Sharon 5 minutes to, you know, go through what the deadlines are. But beyond that, I think we're on track. I talked to you about the policy work ahead of time. If there are questions, let me know. Otherwise, Sharon, if you want to, Frankie.
Well, I just wanted to comment on Fred's idea to send thank you notes. That would be however we do that. I listened as best I could to the deliberation as I was doing my job. That is a, I think, would be a really good awareness thing for people to realize, if they just kind of shined it on, that they did something good. You know, sort of like everybody wants to thank a person who has that Pacific Wonderland plate. Have a tendency to want to say, you did a good thing.
I would even settle for a little 3x8 piece that I could put under somebody's windshield wiper to say, I noticed you've got Pacific Wonderland. Is that creepy?
Creepy.
I'm stalking all those blue and gold plate holders.
As long as there's a capital brand invitation on the back.
If I can't get their name and address, that's next best. Meanwhile, I stop anytime I get a chance, and it's safe. If we're in a parking lot or something, and somebody's got those plates, I talk to them and make sure that they understand. What I need to have with me, and I try to, but I'm out now, is having at least the brochure with the contribution form that we do have. It's a little out of date, but at least it's got an address and a place to
start.
Yeah, give some more.
Sometimes we need to say thank you without an ask.
Oh.
Glad you said yes, but be mindful of that.
I try to restrain myself,
it's hard,
but sometimes it's difficult, Sharon, yes.
So, Sharon, deadlines for newsletter?
Yes, thank you very much. What Jenny's referring to is we actually, I had the privilege of drafting this, and then, of course, Ed and the voices and everybody's going to have input on that. But I tried to make a working document by month on what we're doing. Market newsletter, e-alerts, the fundraising letters, the events, so we can see some consistency in messaging and build up and have a really simple effort to move forward. Now, again, this isn't a sophisticated marketing, communication, branding, but it's a place to start. So that's where all this is coming from. And the next newsletter, I'm still drooling, as you probably figured out. We moved it out to an August-September deliverable instead of trying to get it into households by the third week of July. The reason being is because the outcome of the Oscar decision will set the tone and the direction for all the articles in that newsletter. I mean, everything built off of that. And once you get to about the second week of July, that's a no-mail zone until September. You're just wasting your money based on returns and responses when people read things. That's probably not true with your donors, but because you guys defy all every statistic there is. But so it's moved out. So what we ask you for now is mark your calendars. If you had a draft document, if you were going to write an article, it's July 24th. And we don't mean to be rigid, but we don't build in 2 weeks after that for you to be getting those in. And basically, if it's not in on the 24th, sorry, we're going to put something else in your place. And again, that's not to be disrespectful. It's that everything is built on a domino effect. Okay? So that's what I would message there.
What do you got?
Are the ones we submitted okay at this point? Or?
Oh, yes, and I'll let you know. So those of you that so kindly already put the effort in, we will then update or come back to you and say, how would you like to update this?
Okay.
And that'll happen, yeah. And then I also have outsourced. Mary Overst decided to officially retire, so she's been my sub, and she's why you've been seeing all the wacky writing, because her passion for the Capitol runs all over the place. So she... One of her colleagues, we have now, I've retained Elsie, and Elsie's going to do our newsletter, meaning the editing, okay? Now, again, the design work will all be with in-house graphics, and, obviously all this is in concert and coordination with Ed and his leadership, but I just wanted you to know. So I'm having to really work with my new team to get the tone and, the direction that we're going and not try to slip into that institutional approach called donor-centered, so. And I just wanted to close is that we also, as a result of the adoption of the budget, we'll be working, Ed and I are meeting with in-house graphics on Tuesday, and now we can move forward with developing a plan for delivering all your new marketing materials. The brochure, the website, a header for our e-alerts that you probably are all getting now on a regular basis because we have a schedule and we're putting those out diligently. Updating the letterhead. And then this is another little tool that I have that I wanted to let you guys know that, as you talk about little thank you notes, I just did this in my office and I'd be happy. And I just bought that, cardstock at Home Depot and I just print them out. And because I can't survive without being able to write little notes.
Actually, I think we have a supply that's been printed.
Okay, well, whatever. I was over in Bend and I just, I was like, I need these and I just work with what I have in my office.
That's great.
Yeah, so those kinds of things. And then lastly, with the license plates, as we recognize, if we can find and identify those donors, so be it. But what I can do that I wasn't mindful of is look at where people are buying them. Is it the Willamette Valley? Is it on the coast? And then we can do some focused, maybe public awareness in those communities too. So as a minimum, if we can't get the names. So, yeah, that's all.
Any questions? Any other questions?
No, thank you very much, Jenny. Thank you, Sharon. Ed, are you on the phone?
I think he had to go.
Yeah, it's a long time for him to. That Ed and Sharon are. Oh, okay, good. Anything you want to add as a communications committee report?
Just one thing that Sharon and I are going to meet with the folks over at in-house. Templates for concept contact, and I'm also currently reviewing some stuff for our events person and also our Julie for some templates from events and things that happen on that calendar. We're just trying to get the template ready.
I can't hear him.
Turn him back up.
Okay. Joan.
Ed, Judy's going to give the special events report next, but I'm going to need some help from you doing a media advisory for the July 11th concert in the park and governor portrait unveiling. So I'll be in touch with you.
Jane can't hear you.
Right, yeah, sure.
Good. Any other questions on communications? Herb.
With the list of folks we had to communicate with for the construction plan, if that's approved, should we go back with Oscar?
Okay.
Should we go back to them with a thank you using this little note thing? If we talk to them.
If they voted for it.
Oh, legislators? Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure, absolutely. And Nick will make sure we have an adequate supply for that. I'm expecting at least 16 and 31 and one in the center of the building to receive those. I'll be happy to sign those that if you hadn't made a personal contact, if you've made a personal contact and they followed through, I would like each of you that have been volunteering to do that to take on that task, and I'll get the rest of them.
So, Mr. Chair, if
this will be the second week of July.
Does pass. If somebody could just send us a copy of the vote on it, that would be
good.
Really quick.
Yeah, Nick's nodding his head. That's great. Absolutely. Yeah, because it'll happen probably within hours on each side, because it'll be sine die the very end. Okay, so and any of you are in the building at 4 o'clock in that morning to witness it. Judy gets to sleep in after all these many years of
being here until four.
Oh,
you won't be here for
they're not going to do that. They've hardly even worked a Saturday or a. But they're working twice as economically as they used
there
to.
There you go. Okay. What a good saying.
Fourth of July. We have the top.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah. All right.
Remember that. It was always fun. With that, I will turn to Ms. Hall for a special events committee report.
So my committee report really does kind of dovetail with yours, with the development committee, because we are trying to get as much exposure as we possibly can. So we have been participating in a lot of events. The two recent ones, big success, the Heritage Fair, which was right across the street from the Capitol. And I had more volunteers than I knew what to do with, and it was fabulous. It was so great. Every single time I send something out and say I need somebody, you respond. You guys are all great. Just so wonderful. I can't say thank you enough. And we did also have Must See Oregon at the Oregon Garden. That was on May 16th. And according to Marnie, it was a success for us to be there. They said the attendance was down this year, but she probably reached at least over 200 people statewide, folks, to give us a little more exposure. That I don't think we had any foundation members there, but we did have people from visitor services. And I've distributed a little sheet for you for that. It's kind of like a save the date. So each one of these dates, the Capitol, we are co-sponsoring with the Capitol. Some of these events we're helping financially. The next event is in a couple of days, the Volkswalking, which basically the Capitol will serve as a checkpoint. And they'll be offering tours. Apparently there's a convention in town. What I asked Marty to do was give you kind of a brief synopsis of what each event had to do with. This is once a month, folks. This is a really huge thing. They're really working hard on it. And then, of course, Joan talking about the July 11th concert in the park. And the timing is such that it's starting at 10 o'clock. We hope to tie in with the Saturday market. Get some crowds from that. Then the unveiling of the governors, T.T. Geer and Julius Meyer. Those unveilings are going to happen in the Capitol about 11:15. And we expect to get a few people coming in. I don't know if it's going to be what we anticipate, but the families definitely will be there. And Jane is going to be greeting them. She'll MC our event.
And I am devising a special thank you letter that I want to frame in blue matte with a gold frame.
Very nice.
And Fred says he will sign it if I word it right. So,
Jane, are you going to have the framing done?
Yeah.
You're going to have the framing done.
Jolene.
Yeah. Carol. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask Nick to help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to go into every single one of these. You have the sheet in front of you. So just to make this a little bit more expeditious. We're also trying to develop some type of a timeline through Sharon's been helping with that so that we're not running around looking for sponsorships at the very last minute. So that's part of what we're trying to do with the list is to say, here are the events for the year. And I don't think it'd be a bad idea, actually, to even make it public so that people know and they can put it on their calendars. And we were planning on a fall event at Mahonia Hall and have decided against it this year just because of logistics. We thought we might draw people away from the tree lighting ceremony if we were to have it on the same night to go all the way out in South Salem. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a reception to honor our donors and sponsors in the governor's office, his ceremonial office, and then his conference room. And that'll be
per conference room.
Oh, sorry. Per conference room. And that will be about, I think it happens at 4:30 because the tree lighting is at 5:30.
Sorry, Judy.
No, that's okay. I'm
Mr. Chair and Judy.
Madam Cease.
I just think everybody who hasn't helped out with one of these needs to know that you get to do really fun things, like there's a quiz that you hand to people, and then if they don't know the answers, you sort of give them helpful hints, because then they win a prize, which is something that Jerry actually has an original of. Anyhow, it's really fun.
It's very fun. It really was.
I have to admit, as an observer volunteer, since my services weren't needed, I got to watch our volunteers have way much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Not too much fun, but they certainly enjoyed it, and the interaction was wonderful. So I think we've got some new enthusiastic supporters.
If you do the birthday with Herb, Herb told me something I didn't know, which is, did you know, because February the 14th, of course, is our day, did you know there's a heart in the seal? Just go out and look at the seal. There's a heart.
Where?
Fascinating.
And the school kids. That can go on our quiz, too.
The school kids think that's fun because you send them out to look for it, and then they come back. And anyhow.
You have flags.
Well, the bottom line is we are trying to have an event every month, and it's on a Saturday so that we take advantage of the public's opportunity to visit the Capitol and to bring more folks in.
I say thank you. There's been more activity around this Capitol building to the general public than I have
ever
seen.
Visitor services have been doing such a
great job.
Just great.
Kudos. Kudos to them.
Has the staff said anything about budgetary constraints, or do we need to help them at all with Gateway money on Saturdays?
We have been helping. We've set aside a certain amount of money, but we're looking to increase the events next year.
Okay.
We have four this year we're helping them with financially. Next year I think we're going to probably increase it so that we can help with more of those.
But they don't have to.
And I don't know, I don't know all the ins and outs of what it takes to have the building open on Saturday.
Except a lot of overtime.
Yeah,
it's overtime.
So,
but.
And then you have the in-kind value of about $26,000 visitor services built into your budget again. And so.
But it's a worthwhile investment just because when I observe it, the building open on Saturdays, families can come, mm-hmm. parents aren't working, school is out, and the level of enthusiasm and excitement for not just the building, but what goes on here, what it represents, is just so inspiring. That my dream is that someday we'll be able to be open every weekend. But meanwhile, as the foundation can contribute to this effort, I think it reaps great rewards to everyone. Lunch? Oh, wait until 2 o'clock, would you?
2 o'clock.
Great, thanks.
The real world.
Fred, I would just tell the group if you don't know. I just looked at the numbers last night. You averaged between 1,500 to 2,000 visitors on the last two key events. Again,
sweet. And as we update our materials, I think there'll be more takeaway.
Well, and I think the event we're having in September, I think it's Hispanic Heritage. Mm-hmm. I think they expect record crowds. It's going to be very, very well attended.
Herb.
Just so Sharon knows, one of the biggest expenses of keeping the building open is the security, and that doesn't come out of the in kind. That we have to pay the overtime for that.
Okay. Fred, this is Ed.
All right. Thank you, Ed. I'm just going. Thank you. We're about done here. I just want to go over dates. because I think we need to adopt them so that we can assure our fellow foundation members that these are the dates they can put in their calendar.
I just logged them. I hope we vote.
Well, I hope so too, Norm. I'll let you make the motion when I get to it. Just a reminder that the executive committee will meet 2 weeks prior to the October 21 retreat, so that would be October 7th. So members of the executive committee, note that. The retreat, I want to have some discussion of before we adjourn. I've assigned Ginny the task, as she has so generously undertaken it in years past, to work with whoever she chooses to help us formulate the best use of our time at this retreat. I have been entertaining the thought of, since we're reconstituted, an amended and restated 501c3, and it ain't just the fund directors come September 1, it's all 24 or 25 of us, that we have some solemn occasion to commemorate that transition. And I had considered some 501c3 fiduciary responsibility training, et cetera, that it occurred to me that I can't think of a single one of us that hasn't somehow served on a board of a 501c3 and has some pretty good understanding of that. We'll have more policies poised to us, thanks to governance and development, that will drive that fact home even more poignantly. And so it may not be the best use of our time to have a half day's training on that, but rather because of the Oscar flux that is before us now. And if you notice in the budget, this is in if Oscar doesn't happen, this is out if Oscar does happen, et cetera. And there's a lot if Oscar does occur that we have to undertake in the coming year or two in order to be prepared for the reopening of the Capitol with the new History Gateway Center, with all of the new materials we'll need for training and the visit, the guides to inform the visitors, et cetera. And that may be what we would want to spend some time on as well, as this strategic planning process that we're used to and we're getting increasingly better at, thanks to Ms. Lang and others. Discussion?
President?
Fred.
Were you aware that you're scheduled the next meeting on the opening of the state fair? I don't know whether any of the board,
state fair is in
board
August.
Members are involved in the state fair or not.
What date is that, Fred?
No, it's
21st.
We're not having a meeting September 1st.
No, it was.
That's the hope.
I thought it
October 7th, October 21st.
Effective day of the legislation, Fred, but there's no meeting.
We've been working hard to avoid a September 1st meeting. The bill takes effect September 1st. We transfer money out of state treasury into Pioneer September 1st.
Your meeting's October 5th. Your exec and your full board's 2 weeks.
Is it the 5th?
It's not the 7th.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say the wrong date?
You said the 5th. That's the.
Well, October 5th is your exec committee, and then your full meeting is 2 weeks after that, right?
It's October 7th is the executive committee. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. This is a typo. There's a typo on your agenda.
No, there's not.
No, it's 16. That's 2016.
2016.
We're talking about.
Look at retreat above that.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
What day is the retreat scheduled for?
The 21st. It's right on your agenda.
October.
October 21st.
October
20th. Retreat. October 21st, 2015, 10 a.m., Illihi Hills Country Club. Okay, Herb.
For the fund to think about, I'm looking at that these dates in 2016, especially January and April, we may not have a place to meet at the temporary capital. It's probably going to be too full, so that we may need to rent something.
Well, we're good on this January meeting because we don't exit the building until after the short February session.
Okay.
So the April and June meetings might well be. Yes.
I don't know what your preference will be, but I'll just offer up Illihi no room charge.
Cool.
Yeah,
great.
We'll take it.
Okay.
Great. I know how to find it, too.
And it's pretty.
And it's pretty, even in the, even, keep, especially
I mean,
in the spring.
If we need it, no expense to us other than the lunch.
Very good. Very good.
I'll make arrangements.
That includes greens fees. All right. All right. So those are those dates. Now, back to the retreat. Any thoughts? I mean, do you want to just, Jenny could use some input now, or she'll call you later. Norm, yeah.
You know, kind of the at the global level, a retreat, I've always felt that we do too much business at our retreats, and we don't do enough big thinking. And if we just had some modest breakout work, some themes to be chewing on, you know, get the juices flowing, and not do a bunch of policies. It's just the wrong side of the brain to be on for a retreat. Otherwise, just stop calling it a retreat. It's the October meeting.
That's right.
Good, good point. I think I see Joan nodding her head. She may have some priorities. There may be one or two that are imperative to adopt to continue in existence, but I think that's the standard of bringing forth.
We'd have some, but just don't make it the focus.
Minimum, right? Consent minimum. Calendar or something
yeah.
that we can.
Okay.
Right, if we have them out enough in time in advance so people have a chance to review them, executive committee review them, then. Okay, Herb.
By that date, I'm hoping we'll have one or two of the oral histories completed. I'd like to maybe show those and make sure that people think we're on the right track.
And that gets juices flowing,
that's
too.
Good stuff.
That's good, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Good. Any other thoughts to productively engage ourselves staring out the windows at the beautiful surroundings of the
hill.
Well,
the shades
will be down. Oh, okay.
Joan. I guess, just something to think about. Do we want to have the opportunity to come in the night before or something and maybe have a, I don't know, maybe it's a no host. Anyway, we don't have a whole lot of time as a foundation to interact, and I think that was one of the things that was
socialize.
Really fun at the Heritage Fair is we had time to talk to each other. And, I mean, I don't know that, anyway, something to think about. It doesn't have to be mandatory. We certainly probably don't want to pay for ourselves to have a nice dinner, but we could all pay our own way or whatever. I don't know, Jerry, if Ilahi, if we could do something there or... that means, you know, I drive back to Portland or I get a hotel room, but
well,
so what, you know?
I was sleeping at the 19th floor.
I feel the same way.
You and I can room, Judy.
Yeah. There you go.
Frankie.
It worked when I was on the Travel Information Council. We did that consistently, quarterly, and it worked wonderfully.
Yeah, it does.
Because we got together and were creative together and thought big. I like that idea a lot.
Good, great idea. I should point out that we have tried to get Julia Brem Edwards and Jason Atkinson here. There was they were aware of the dates, but then they didn't get the email last week that pinned it down with agendas and materials. I've communicated with both of them. Jason had a death in the family. Just very over the weekend, and he's very rapidly trying to figure out how they have to respond to that. So he's regretfully not here today, and I don't know what the circumstances were, how close who it was in the family, but that's that. And reminded him of the coming dates. And same with Julia was out of town and just got my email this morning, and I told her it's really important that she come for October. Again, they're not confirmed, but I'm assuming that LIC will meet immediately after Sine died, as they want, and that Nick will make sure that their appointments are on that meeting's agenda for confirmation. But again, they are members of the foundation family, and we've already elected to have them aboard, and they will be full directors come October. So the dates now are before us, and I promised Julia that I wouldn't nail these down until we'd adopted them so that she can calendar in advance. Same with Jason and the rest of us. Norm's already got them in his computer. So he moves that we adopt these proposed dates for the executive committee and the foundation for October 2015 and calendar year 2016. Any further discussion? Hearing none, any objection? Dates adopted. Put them in.
Oh, it's on the back.
All right. Is there any further business to come before the foundation membership? Mr. Smith.
It seems more than appropriate that we have a moment to say some things about our founder.
Yes.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you.
And his time and service here has been more than appreciated. I hope that this isn't just the last time we're going to see your face when we're together.
I'm the chair emeritus. I plan to come back and conduct meetings oftentimes.
Offer accepted.
We would not be sitting in this room taking grand credit for great advances without the first advance. And our general is seated with us today.
And Frankie was right there in the beginning.
Thank you.
It's been fun. I'm going to miss it.
Well, you're not going to miss it at all. We're going to have you back for every fun thing we do. The onus is on us to make sure that you
staff some tables for us. Yeah.
That's right. You've been our number one volunteer all along. So
it's been a great group, and I really wish you great success. And I know you're going to do it. As I look at those numbers and the planning, it's just exciting. Just to see where this is going to be 10 years from now. It's just amazing what can happen.
That's encouraging. Thank you.
Wish you well.
And I think there are our protocols for this, but has our founder been acknowledged as an emeritus member?
Yes,
chair emeritus.
Yes, he was at the
chair
last,
emeritus.
The
is
last
what we decided.
That was your, yeah, that was
yeah.
Yeah.
That means you get all the emoluments and privileges appurtenant thereto.
And the pay.
And the pay. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think you have to give a little mention to the person that got him to introduce the bill.
Well, he already has.
But I'm hanging around.
Frankie's the backbone behind the whole thing.
Well, yeah, she got the first chair, and now she's got to keep an eye on the current and the future chair.
I can't believe how wonderful how it has evolved. Yeah. Is exactly what was in my head when I was thinking of it. I mean, it's just. It gives me goosebumps.
And if you
that we're going to take care of our building.
If you could have watched, I think it's probably one of the fastest bills that ever gone through the both houses inside
at the gift shop.
Jenny, I don't know whether I was in confidence or not, but Jenny did confide in me that this was the first legislative session in all the time she's been here that she's scored 100%.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Of her side.
That's Gary. You're on her side.
Right. Okay.
No, she's done a great job, and it's been a pleasure signing on. When I retired, I asked Frankie what her best words of advice would be to me, being a longtime friend and having preceded me out the PERS door. She said, just say no when people ask you to volunteer. And then, who asked me to sign up for the foundation?
I was going
to
say, right. How many times does she say no?
More now.
All right. Thank you, Vern, for all you've done for us. And we will be keeping you around and certainly keeping you in the loop.
Yeah, you'll get the
thank you, Norm, for bringing that up. And no further business to appear before the foundation membership. This is the last meeting, final meeting of the foundation membership. And we will be comprised as a amended and restated foundation at our October meeting. And we are adjourned.
Judy, the fund member.
And we are adjourned.
Oh, Judy.